You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this. Good morning to you. Welcome along this Tuesday morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. We're here all the way until about 9:30, and maybe a little bit longer this morning. There's plenty for us to sink our teeth into, and news coming in from around the world that is going to be of interest to you on the show this morning. Before we get into that, though, it is one of the all-time great sporting weeks of the year. It ends with a Grand Slam decider when Ireland try and poop the party in the Millennium Stadium. But it's not the Millennium Stadium anymore. It's the Vitality. Duh. Vitality. That was a stupid name change.
Well, it's not the Vitality, it's the Principality. The Principality. Vitality is the Bournemouth Stadium.
Can we start this show again? God damn it. I knew it was a
You need a bit of vitalisation yourself this morning, I think.
If anybody wants to come aboard as our coffee sponsor, then I can guarantee that you will get some sweet, sweet airtime. Could be a bit nicer than the one
Is that pure giddiness that's kind of exuding through your pores at the moment for whatever this week of sport is?
Because of the week, right? It's the end of the Six Nations kind of is the harbinger of the start of decent weather generally.
Yeah.
There are frequently spectacular ends to the tournament that are memorable. Sometimes when you go on those away trips, although I was in I had the misfortune to be in the Millennium Stadium when Wales beat Ireland and won that Grand Slam. In 05, and the Welsh fans, they're not good winners.
Are they not?
They're not really good winners. You wouldn't say they're...
Are they good losers?
Yeah, I'd say they're decent losers, yeah. I mean, but they don't rub it in your face. They were definitely like, wah, you know, howling banshee-like, and that was the men.
And how, was it just howling kind of in your face? Was it howling in general at the moon sort of thing? Or
Both. They were gee-eyed, and it was like early enough. Absolutely, it was like the most decadent. I've never been to the Kentucky Derby, but I imagine this is what the infield is like at the end of the day.
Was there anything said to you personally?
Not that I remember. I mean, it was just this kind of general sense of, oh, these people are very nice. What's going on here?
They come down from the valleys and they shout in Irish people's face.
There were definitely a lot of shouting.
Yeah, that's...
I'd recommend going, in to see it so that, you know, you put your anthropologist hat on.
Are they the worst supporters in the world? In a winning vicinity that you've experienced?
I mean, how are the Kerry supporters at winning? Good winners?
Good, bad losers. My brief flirtation with Mayo winners has been dreadful. Absolutely appalling. Horrifying. PTSD inducing.
So this was after they beat Kerry in
2017. I don't really want to talk about it.
Mayo Mick, the chief amongst them.
No, Kerry won that game. That was 2014.
Okay, yeah. So when...
This is 2017.
What happened?
Replay. Andy Moran. Sorry, I mean Mayo. Beat Kerry.
Was it close?
No, it wasn't. Not in the replay.
Six points most of the game and then they finished three.
Something like that, I think, yeah. I don't really want to talk... I don't really kind of remember the details of a Mayo, by far the superior team, deserved to win. The supporters do not deserve anything.
So you're going on the record officially and saying Mayo supporters are the worst winners. You hate Mayo a lot.
We were making this point the other...
Did they beat you in the league game as well that time that you came back? That's what started all this.
And Andy Moran beat us... I mean, sorry, Mayo beat us that night as well, which may happen again this weekend. We made this point last week. Is the same thing true for Liverpool fans? Now, I know that's a very harsh thing to say because I haven't been at Anfield and... supporting a team against Liverpool when they win, and that's really the only way to gauge how good or how bad a support base is at winning. And I kind of threw Liverpool, Mayo all into the one bucket because of the length of time and how close they've come to winning the sort of desired competition that they want to win. So maybe it is a bit harsh to throw them all in there together, but I guess we'll see once an All-Ireland or Premier League happens how good or bad those fans are. But clearly Wales are number one in some people's eyes.
Well, the show is off to a spectacular start this morning where we've managed to annoy a lot of people in one fell swoop. All of Wales and all of Mayo. Come on. Here's what's coming up on the show this morning. Rugby's Type 5 with Neil Tracy around about 9:05. Working backwards, John Duggan at Cheltenham is going to join us around about 8:45 with his first tips of the week for you. We've got news that Zinedine Zidane is going back to Real Madrid. This is a weird story. This is the whole part of it where an entire country's World Cup hopes are torpedoed after Zidane walks out. and a new manager comes in and he goes, and then the manager after him goes, and then they get Zidane back before the end of the season. Why is he coming back for the... I don't know. It makes no sense at all. Graham Hunt is going to try and sift through the wreckage of that story for us a little bit later on. That's at 8.35. Anthony Moyes, top 10 footballers in the country. This was controversial last year. Owen didn't quite have the stones to put Sean O'Shea in his top 10 last year, but he does this year, right?
Well, this time last year, I don't think anybody would blame me for such a thing.
But you did. You knew in your heart, you were like, this guy's top 10. But you didn't.
I knew he would be.
You were too cautious.
I think I had David Clifford in the top 10, but not Sean O'Shea, which, as 2018 developed to be, was 100% the correct decision. I was right.
And then straight away, we're going to start with the newspapers. It's with the newspapers that we start, and with the lead story in the Mirror this morning. They're the only ones who have it. Is that... I'm going to grab your mirror for you now.
It's a messy desk this morning. There's so many Cheltenham supplements just sprawled across the place.
McGregor arrested is the front page headline on the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. UFC star charged with strong-armed robbery in mobile phone smash row. So there is the mugshot that has come from the Miami Beach Police. And we're going to talk you through the timeline of what we know here, obviously. Okay, this is not going to be good. Okay, so we'll start that. Conor McGregor was arrested in Miami overnight. It all stems from an alleged altercation with a fan who was trying to take a photograph outside a Miami Beach hotel. The issue seems to be that he was taken into custody at 5:56 local time under charges of strong-armed robbery, a second-degree felony, and criminal mischief, a third-degree felony. He was released following the payment of $12,500 bail, and there's footage of him being discharged. He's already also posted on Instagram. So there's the arrest sheet, which has the strong-armed robbery. Basically, it's alleged that he took the phone. There's his Instagram story, a picture of a Miami police car. Or is it very wise to be putting pictures up of... the police who've just arrested you. Anyway, so that's the Insta story. And then, patience in this world is a virtue I continue to work on. I love my fans dearly. Thank you all. That's the picture of him taken by Pap, of him leaving jail, having been arrested for... so he takes the phone, allegedly, throws it on the ground, stomps on it, and then walks off with the phone. The phone was alleged to be worth $1,000, according to... the fan. The police were called. His lawyers subsequently issued a statement. Last evening, Conor McGregor was involved in a minor altercation over a cell phone that resulted in a call to law enforcement. Mr. McGregor appreciates the response of law enforcement and pledges his full cooperation. And just to put this in some context, obviously, there was the previous arrest in New York in April 2018. Ariel Helwani is this morning reporting that McGregor completed his community service in New York recently, stemming from the incident at the Barclays Center. His case is officially closed there. So whatever comes of the incident in Miami would not affect his plea deal in New York. So it's not like it's going to be a second strike. But you'd have to wonder if this arrest just ends up going away, and if, you know, the phone can be replaced and something can be smoothed over to prevent another criminal record for McGregor, because maybe the second one might make it difficult to travel freely in and out of the United States. Certainly not something that you would want on your record. And they were in Miami celebrating his mother's 60th birthday. There's a picture from Instagram. My mother's 60th birthday party at the Versace mansion. My mother has long been a fan of this fine Italian silk. In fact, we are fans of all the Italian fabrics. And then it has an ad. So the Versace mansion, obviously famous for Gianni Versace being assassinated on the steps of it. I don't know if you saw the follow-up to the People vs. O.J. Simpson. There was a series about that where they delved into the Versace murder. What happened, it was actually a serial killer who shot Gianni Versace on the steps of that mansion. That they're having that 60th birthday all dressed in Versace. So that is the lead story in the newspapers this morning. Some breaking news overnight. Conor McGregor has been arrested and released on bail or bond of 12.5 grand, is what they say. It's bond. So you get more details on that on offtheball.com, and we will continue updating that story as we get some updates for you across this morning. What else is happening?
Well, we're going to be looking at Cheltenham tips a little bit later on. We'll get to them in a moment. But I think we're going to go through some of the back pages now. I think I've finally managed to sift through all the Cheltenham supplements and got them out of your way.
Going with the tabloids.
We'll start with the Irish Daily Mail this morning, which says, give your all. Schmidt urges Ireland to go full tilt at Wales and Kingdom boost as Clifford is ready to return. So Kerry Hayes, David Clifford could make his first appearance of the season in Saturday night's game against Mayo. The Sun then goes with off. Solskjaer is ready to ship out Sanchez on loan and off as well. Guardiola sweat over keeping Gundogan and Sané. And don't wind up the fans, PFA chief tells the players. So Gordon Taylor warned players not to incite fans with their celebrations, which is an interesting take. Back page of the Irish Daily Star is Lucky Man. That's the headline in relation to Jack Grealish saying himself how lucky he was that the supporter was not carrying a weapon. And Jack goes for glory. It's a part of the Cheltenham coverage there on the back of the Star. That is, of course, Jack Kennedy. The Herald then goes with Liverpool. Munich all in to win. Van Dijk warns Reds of big fight in Bayern return leg. And desire will push us on, says City's Guardiola. It's Manchester City against Schalke in the second leg of their Champions League last 16 encounter tonight. The Daily Telegraph then goes with look who's back. It's a picture of Zinedine Zidane. But the most important picture really is carried on the back of The Guardian. And it is the picture of those jeans and those shoes and those lack of socks worn by the French legend. Zidane steps back into the Bernabeu. He's made a sensational and rather eye-catching return as Real Madrid manager 284 days just after he walked out of the club, having won a third Champions League. Now, the back page of the Mirror then this morning is enough is enough. FA's pledge to get tough on thugs after attack. And the Racing Post is, as you can imagine, a dare to dream. It's a pun on Boover Dare, bidding for a sensational champion hurdle hat-trick. And at the back page is Teenage Kicks, which is in relation to a young Manchester City side that may line out tonight. And Zidane's return to Real dugout stuns the Lairs.
Yeah, stuns everybody. Just to go back to the McGregor story, which is on the front only of the Mirror in terms of the newspapers that we have this morning, it wouldn't be a Conor McGregor story without some interjection from Paulie Malignaggi. So what did Paulie have to say? Well, yo, at the Notorious MMA, don't you think you rob your fans enough every time, in capitals, they order one of your fights? They gotta watch you get your ass kicked and quit? Question mark, exclamation mark. If you need a phone that bad, don't sweat it, bro. I'll just put you on my phone plan. Hashtag no balls. Cry laughing emoji. Cry laughing emoji. Sent opportunistically at whatever time he sent it. I mean, you know, Paulie never missed an opportunity to implicate himself in a story and stoke the rivalry that we'll all eventually end up paying a bit of cash for or slash illegally finding a stream for the fight when they fight.
Well, you think it's going to be the best fight of all time?
No, I think it's going to be I think there's proper beef. I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see if that ever happens. So let's move on to the newspapers from the broadsheet perspective this morning. Schmidt has won last Six Nations boxer ticket in Cardiff. Never won a Six Nations game in Cardiff. Gatland and Wales set for a red letter day. That's Jerry Thornley's piece there. And then France have lost three forwards, Wenceslas Lloret, Demba Bamba and Jefferson Poirot in a 7-minute period by the 17th minute, albeit Bamba returned soon after with his head heavily bandaged. So injuries take their toll and carnage likely to continue all the way to Cardiff. These are Six Nations talking points, which is pretty interesting that the level of attrition is just something we've come to expect from international rugby. It's like, yeah, you need about 40 players basically if you're going to have a proper World Cup campaign, and that means players who start the tournament at home are going to end up making important contributions across the tournament. Hurling fixtures had to make up a 20 game Super Saturday. A lot of people complaining yesterday about the fact that there are so many games at the weekend, and that the Sunday and Monday aren't being used properly. Sunday obviously is Ireland Club Finals Day. Tag team Mullins Trio poised to make Ruby's Tuesday. So it's a picture of Willie and Ruby having the chats yesterday at Cheltenham. We need to maintain top level to win is the headline on Gary Doyle's piece, which is about the rugby in the Times Ireland edition. A picture of Dan Levy, who they are speculating might be in line for a recall. And then also the news that the Pro 14 is going to carry on during the World Cup, that the full fixtures hasn't quite been announced just yet, but they have announced a date for it to start. And the Times are making the point that the fixtures were out about 5 months ago for the top 14 in France and the Premiership in England. speculating that perhaps there were some more South African teams who were being lined up for a move to the Pro 14. And then Cam before the storm, Mullins and Walsh braced for battle alongside Benedict Dieu yesterday. Nice blue skies. Schmidt, France display must be a starting point, saying 50 minutes, not good enough. And Harnedy and Delaney await suspension fate ahead of relegation clash. So when the bans for the red cards that Seamus Harnedy received and Conor Delaney from Kilkenny received at the weekend will be served is still to be determined. There was a suggestion that initially Cork and Kilkenny were going to toss for who got relegated slash into the second part of the first division next year, and then they were like, well, we got some sending off, so why don't we just play the game? And now it looks like there might be a rule that prevents that game from counting as you expunging your suspension. So back to a toss.
But yeah, there's no reason to play this other than to get rid of those suspensions. So toss is definitely what I would go for if I was in that situation.
Yeah. All right. You are busting some Cheltenham myths for us.
I've literally just been doing it for up until 30 seconds ago while you were going through the broadsheets. I heard nothing you said there while I was just polishing off the rest of the supplements. So I've gone through every Cheltenham supplement that we have in the newspapers this morning. There's about 30 tipsters that I've picked out and basically compiled a little table of who is the consensus horse in each race. So we're going to go through all the races now and tell you who's getting most of the tips from most of the tipsters in the newspapers this morning. And we will start with the Novices Hurdle, which is the first race off at 1:30. And the horse that seems to be leading the way at the moment at odds of 4-1 is Classical Dream. This is the Willie Mullins horse, ridden by Ruby Walsh today at odds of 4-1. Just to go through some of the tipsters that are backing this today, Ruby Walsh himself in the Examiner tips this not only as a single, but suggests you do it as part of a double. Pat Keane of the Examiner suggests this as an each-way bet, while Chris Cook in the Guardian has it as his Napa today. You've also got Brian Flanagan of the Star, Robbie Power, who's riding in the Herald, and Johnny Burke in the Mail backing Classical Dream. Kind of an outsider here at 12-1, Vision Donner is getting a bit of backing as well. Tommy Lyons, Gordon Elliott, Jack Kennedy, Peter O'Hare, and Ed Chamberlain in the Daily Telegraph are all mentioning Vision Donner, so that's one to keep an eye on at odds of 12-1. Now, in the 2:10, which is the Arkle Hardline, is the horse that's got most of the tips today across the newspapers. So at odds of 5-1, you're looking at this. It's going to be it's a Gordon Elliott-trained horse, ridden by Davy Russell later on. You've got the likes of Wayne Bailey, Matt Chapman, Gordon Elliott himself tipping this. Davy Russell tips it. Jack Kennedy tips it. Sam Turner in the Mail, Chris Cook in the Guardian.
What's
and
the horse?
Jared Delamere in the Racing Post. Hardline at odds of 5-1. If you're looking for an outsider, then in this race, kind of the second most tipped horse has been Glenn Forza, but that's an even shorter priced horse at 4-1. But then at 11-1, Paloma Blue. Brian Flanagan in the Star, Robbie Power in the Herald, and Tom Segal in the Racing Post have mentioned Paloma Blue. So one to keep an eye on if you're looking for a bigger price. We will, by the way, keep you up to speed on how all of these tipsters get on throughout the course of the week, so no pressure on any of them. The 250 then is a bit of a mix. It's hard to actually get any sort of consensus. And
what time is the first race going to post?
1:30.
Okay.
At 10-3 then, it's the Handicap Chase. And as I say there, it's hard to get a consensus on any of the kind of leading horses in this one. In fact, the two most tipped horses actually have 4 apiece for the tipsters across the newspapers. It's Kustar Savola at odds of 10-1 and Give Me a Copper at odds of 8-1. So Give Me a Copper is going to be ridden. It's a Paul Nicholls horse ridden by Cobden, and then Lizzie Kelly's on board Kustar Savola. And as I say, 10-1 and 8-1 respectively there. You've got Michael Verney backing Kustar Savola. Verney, you'll remember, had a very good Cheltenham last year. I think I just followed him from the Irish Independent and had a pretty good week.
Did he, yeah?
Yeah, he did. He had an excellent one. Steve Mullen of The Sun, Tom Segal of The Racing Post, and Jared Delamere in The Racing Post also backing that one. Then Give Me a Copper. Katie Walsh, who's riding in The Herald this week, has backed Give Me a Copper. Dave Mitchell in The Mirror, Peter O'Hare in The Mirror, and Megan Nichols in The Sun backing that. Outside of that then, as I say, you can't really pick anybody stand out from the tipsters this morning. Up for Review, Beware the Bear, Mr. Whittaker, and Noble Endeavour all picking up a couple of tips as well across the newspapers. The 3:30, the big one, the Champion Hurdle. This one is a different story. It really is 2-3 maybe horse
Apple's
race,
Jade.
according to the tipster. So Apple's Jade is the most backed horse here at odds of 15-8. That is, of course, the Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy's going to be on board Apple's Jade for Gordon Elliott. Bouverdaire has got a few names behind it today at odds of 9-4. So you've got Michael Verney on Bouverdaire in the Irish Independent. Robbie Power and Aidan Coleman both riding in the Herald. And Katie Walsh in the Herald as well have backed Bouverdaire. So a lot of Herald love for Bouverdaire this morning. Sam Turner in the Mail and Chris Cook in the Guardian also backing that. But interestingly, you've got Lorena at odds of 7-2 also in this one, and the handicapping may work in her favour. Brian O'Connor in the Irish Times saying that perhaps she's been completely undervalued going into this race. It might be interesting to get more of an expert view on that a little bit later on in the show. So you've got Brian O'Connor, Pat Keane at the Examiner tips Lorena as an each way bet, Matt Chapman in the Sun and Johnny Burke in the Mail backing that. But as I say, Apple's Jade, about a dozen tipsters there this morning, including the likes of Gordon Elliott and Davy Russell and Jack Kennedy himself, saying it's his nap of the day. I like the way a jockey says a horse that he's riding is his nap of the day. I like that confidence. The 10 past four then is the Mayor's Hurdle, and there's really only one horse to look at here if you're looking for a winner. It is Willie Mullins, Ruby Walsh, Benny Desdu, I should say, like at even odds. When I actually opened it up this morning, having looked at this horse being mentioned everywhere over the past couple of days,
like, oh, I'm going to get rich on this.
Well, no, not at all. I was like, you can't. This is going to be like 10-1 on or something like that, but it's actually evens at the moment. If you want an outsider on this, if you're somehow looking for an each way bet, Gordon Elliott in the Sun is happy with the signs Lacanine Leader has been showing at odds of 66-1. Robbie Power in the Herald mentions Alatrix also at the same odds, while Tom Segal in the Racing Post mentions an each way bet on Momella. Couple of horses there if you want to look elsewhere from Benny Desdu, according to the newspapers this morning. And then just the last couple of races, the Novices Handicap Chase at 10-5. Cubo Mania has got most of the tips, more tips than any other horse, I should say, in the newspapers this morning. Five tips coming from the likes of Tommy Lyons, Gordon Elliott, Davy Russell, Aidan Coleman and Katie Walsh at odds of 14-1. That's the 450. It's another Gordon Elliott horse. Davy Russell is going to ride it. You've also got Tower Bridge getting a bit of backing as well at odds of 8-1. I think that's the favourite in the Novices Handicap Chase. And then finally, at 5:30, OK Corral is the horse that seems to be standing out. I called this OK Corral before we came on air. You were going to have me in.
You were like, what's that? What's OK? Why is it OK Corral?
Stop Wild West shaming me. Wild West lack of information shaming me. OK Corral at odds of 4-1 in the Amateur Riders Novices Chase. OK Corral, it's a Nicky Henderson horse. Derek O'Connor is going to ride it. And the likes of Michael Verney, Wayne Bailey also in the Irish Independent, Brian Flanagan in the Star, Robbie Power in the Herald, Aidan Coleman in the Herald, Ed Chamberlain in the Telegraph, amongst many others, backing this. Not the favourite at all. The favourite is 11-4 favourite, Bally Ward. Ruby Walsh himself is tipping that in the Irish Examiner as part of a double. Brian O'Connor in the Irish Times and Katie Walsh in the Herald backing that. So that's...
Never got into Westerns?
Never got into Westerns. I don't really... I do get it.
Unforgiven?
No.
You didn't like it? You haven't seen it?
Haven't seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Unforgiven's very good.
Okay, I'll make sure to watch it. Who's in Unforgiven?
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood. Of course he is. Like, if there is a Western that exists, Clint Eastwood is in it. Or John Wayne?
Like, Unforgiven won about 4 Oscars. It was, you know, 20 years after he made his last proper Western. Mm-hmm. There's a period of Westerns where Sergio Leone makes them late 60s, early 70s, and they're mad and wild and brilliant. Bob Dylan's in one of them. And then they disappear because everybody thought these are shite.
Maybe they were right.
They made too many of them. The rip-offs were too many. And then Clint directs and stars in this revenge thriller. It's mm-hmm. brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Well, I'll take your word for it. Just because it's won Oscars doesn't mean it's an amazing movie, though.
That's true, Owen. I mean, that's the hottest of hot takes right there. But in the case...
Like Avatar won a lot of Oscars and it's absolutely appalling.
In the case of Unforgiven, it stands the test of time. Let's move on. Right, those Cheltenham tips and the tip busting will happen for you every day, every morning, or at least as long as Owen can sustain the amount of work that it took this morning to do that.
It took a lot of work.
Anthony Moyes is in the studio with us next. We bring you our spring edition of the top 10 footballers in the country. Brian O'Driscoll was on Monday Night Rugby last night, appalled by the French performance. Have a look.
I'm aghast at how bad defensively that is. Like, we were in the studio and we were all shocked within touching distance of the kickoff. It's just a lack of organisation or understanding of when one person is out of position, you've got to facilitate someone else going in.
Is it so bad, would you expect a good AIL player?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. How someone isn't thinking, well, there's our fullback kicking the ball and getting into the chase line. Who's going to fill his position?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. If that happened at schools rugby, you'd be crying out. You'd be pulling your hair out.
Okay.
So I think they got me... Off on a bad footing, and they offered very little. You know, defensively they were hard and physical. Mm. But in fairness to Ireland, no Six Nations side is going to lie down. And this is a big, tough French side. They don't have a huge amount more. It was more the team that played against England than the one that played against Scotland. But overall, you know, pleased with how Ireland played. And I think they'll be happy with the confidence. You could see, you know, in a couple of the tries, the satisfaction, the, you know, the reaction after the game. Anytime you beat France by 12 points, it's a good day at the office. And it should have been beating them by 26 points.
Okay, so more of that good stuff available for you on our YouTube channels. It's 11 minutes past 8 this morning. Anthony Moyles is with us. Anthony, you're welcome. Before we have the reveal magnifico of the 2019 edition of our Top 10 Footballers, we should look back. We need to hold ourselves to account here. Here's January 2018 in the top 10 that we picked. 10 was Michael Murphy, 9 Brian Fenton, 8 Paul Gainey, 7 Andy Moran, 6 Conor McManus, 5 Con O'Callaghan, 4 Jack McCaffrey, 3 Dermot Connolly, 2 Lee Keegan and 1 James McCarthy. It's not bad. I mean, Fenton was obviously the best in the country, but at that time last year, you can stand over that, really, can't you?
I think you can.
You put Cluxton in before the end, to be honest. You
I think I did.
Cluxton should have been number one.
Yeah. There's no one really that stands out. Like, I mean, that was probably strong. I think I was arguing a little bit about O'Callaghan and Cluxton, I think, if I remember correctly. Andy Moore and McManus. It's interesting. Like, I mean, some of them have remained very, very strongly throughout that period, haven't they?
Yeah, but
who drops out of that? Like, initially from that list you're looking at?
Paul Gainey.
Paul Gainey probably out of the top 10. Andy Moran probably out of the top 10.
Yeah.
Connolly probably out of the top 10.
Yeah.
But I mean, Moran was great in that cameo we saw in Boston, but that's not really enough to make the top 10 list for water in the country at the moment, is it?
No.
I mean, he probably is still, though.
Even though you guys have given me a fairly wide remit, I have actually put parameters on myself.
Okay, well, let's see how we did in the summer last year before we get to that. So here's June 2018. 10, Sean O'Shea. The first time Sean O'Shea has managed to make it on.
Oh, listen.
Owen Ban Gallagher is 9. See, is that my pronunciation of Ban? Owen Ban Gallagher. Stephen Cluxton makes it to number 8. Paddy McBrearty makes it to number 7, just before the cruciate. Kevin McLaughlin, number 6. Paul Gainey, number 5. Damien Comer, number 4. Ryan McHugh, 3. James McCarthy, 2. And Brian Fenton, who was Footballer of the Year, as we predicted, way back in June. That's good.
We got to remember Jack McCaffrey's injury.
They're your top 10.
Yeah, no, I think, if I remember correctly, myself and yourself, we had the vision to go with Sean O'Shea, but we had someone in the studio
that day. Have we got mine?
He just couldn't do. He said he was around 15, 16.
Can we just clarify that you were wrong, first of all? No. If you were going to pick one Kerry youngster at June last year, I picked David Clifford. Who was the Kerry youngster?
This is yours, Owen. Comer 10, Murphy 9, Clifford. Paul Mannion 8.
He said that so confidently there.
Yada, yada, yada.
You were doing too much horse racing research.
Yada, yada, yada.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, James O'Donoghue, I see.
Oh, and you've gone red.
Yeah.
As I should be. I go red when I get mildly embarrassed, but I'm humiliated right now.
Oh, yeah.
Here's mine.
About that, the better.
Connolly 10, McHugh, Ryan McHugh 9, Conor McManus 8, Paul Gainey 7, Sean O'Shea 6. Look at that. Correct. Jack McCaffrey 5, Cluxton 4, McCarthy 3, Michael Murphy 2, Brian Fenton 1. Now, for the big reveal for the 2019, get your money down right now. What are we, the 12th of March? This is who the top 10 footballers in the country are right now, according to Anthony Moyles. 10, Niall Morgan. Ooh. 9, Conor McManus. 8, Dermot O'Connor. 7, Kieran Kilkenny. 6, Donald Keoghan. 5, James McCarthy. 4, Paul Mannion. 3, David Clifford. 2, Sean O'Shea. 1, Brian Fenton. Wow, Clifford gets in despite not having played a second of football.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So my parameters went a little bit out the window on him, but I have to keep him in there.
What are your parameters?
Well, I kind of want to see that actually you've given him a bit of game time, okay, and how you're going in the league. So, like, for a few of them, I think Morgan has been excellent. Like, Morgan had a bit of a dip in form there a year or two ago. Do you remember? There was a lot of question marks. He was left out of a few teams. But I think this year, like, all, you know, take out, notwithstanding the scores he's kicked when he's come up.
They are ridiculous. Like, it's kind of...
But he's a major threat. Like, if he has that ability to do that from goal, well, then he has the ability, should I say, take a point on it, that he has the ability then to come out and ping passes to you, you know, from an offensive point of view, into your path. Like, he's an excellent kicker. Like, he's as good as Beggin in that sense. Off the ground, he's good. He's conceded, I think, 3 goals, 2 against which were Mayo. So he's had 3 clean sheets, and the Mayo game was a farce, you know, really. And he conceded a pretty well. It was a good goal against Roscommon, but he's been solid, you know. And I think he's a real leader for them in there. I was between him and Petey Hart for Tyrone, because I think Hart, like we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, Tyrone have done exactly what they did last year. Really poor in the first few games. Looked like they were trying some new stuff, trying to get, and then just in the last 1 or 2 games where they have beaten Cavan and Monaghan and beaten them fairly well. Like, Cavan were going fairly well, and they only kicked 10 points. So they've, I think there's only one other team in Division 1 who's conceded less than them. So again, defensively, fine, but I think they're starting to get their players. Probably the big question is, where exactly do they play Matty Donnelly? That's the big conundrum for them. But I think he deserves to be in there. Like, I mean, Cluxton's obviously still up there, but we just haven't seen him.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So Niall Morgan is 10. Conor McManus is 9. That's fairly straightforward. He's still at the same level.
I think it is. You know, he's still the main threat there. You know, he really is. You can see it in the games. It was nearly going to be like the McManus show a couple of weeks ago, I think, against Tyrone. But then Tyrone got a handle on him and put a lot of bodies around him. I actually thought Monaghan, from the first few games, McCarron was looking good. They were looking solid without him. But then they have to revert back to him because they've realised, actually,
we need him.
Yeah, we need him. And we need him big time. Dermot O'Connor, like, I actually would have been, I wouldn't have been a fan of Dermot O'Connor at all over the last number of years. Like, I would have been actually trying to point out times when he was being a bit lazy, when he was, looked like he was in it, but he wasn't really in it. And he has just been immense the last, I think, 12 to 18 months. Like, the Kildare game last year stands out to me, where he was cramping in both calf muscles and he was still trying to run down the pitch.
Yeah,
he was literally brought off that day on a stretcher, you know. He's captain the course this year, and I think he deserves it. You know, I think he has absolutely led the line. And for a guy who probably, they were trying to play him inside, they were trying to play him in the half-forward line. You know, he obviously has massive talent, he's won a lot. I'd say they were kind of, so to take on the role in midfield, when, by the way, they went from a situation where they had loads of midfielders to where they had no midfielders.
Yeah.
You know, and they needed someone to step into the role. And I think he has stepped into it in a sense of, okay, we need someone just to fill this gap. But now he's actually made it his own.
He's a different type of midfielder as well from the other types of midfielders they have, and it suddenly allows them to match up against anybody else.
I think so. Yeah, yeah, he is a different, because he's very, very mobile. Like, yeah. The one thing you would have always said was, with Shamey O'Shea or Aidan O'Shea, or even if it was Aidan and
Tom Parsons.
Parsons was mobile enough. But you would always feel over the 70 minutes you might wear them down.
Yeah, say Dublin have James McCarthy and then they take off the other midfielder and bring on Michael Dara for the last 20 minutes.
Correct.
At that point, Mayo are looking, oh, we're gassed. But if you stick Dermot O'Connor and either of those two, it's like, well, all right, let's go. I will match you stride for stride here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was a massive bonus for them, because, again, I think the importance of midfield has actually, it's because of the kick-out rule and everything else around it, and the ability to kick ball into the forward line, so that ability of to make the offensive mark, the importance of good ball players in the middle of the pitch has really increased.
Now, obviously, that's not going to matter for the championship, right?
No, I know, but still, you need to. He needs to have, like, what I found, first of all, exactly what you say, in those last 10 or 15 minutes, you could see Aidan flagging. You could see nearly Shamey flagging in game, Shamey O'Shea. You could see, you know, anyone that put it. Parsons was, to be fair, was always able to well go over the 70. But just from the pure volume of work against the likes of Fenton, McCarthy or McCauley. So they needed someone with legs and someone who has a bit of size and someone then is also able to execute passes and kick scores.
Yeah.
And he can do a bit of all of that. And who's still big enough to compete with those fellas.
He's still only 24 as well, had fairly chronic injury issues from the time that he, you know, obviously he was playing a lot of football when he was young footballer of the year. So it feels like he's about to enter his peak.
I'd be very excited if I was a Mayo fan for what he can actually do this year.
Okay, so who's next? Back up to our list. So Dermot O'Connor's 8, Kieran Kilkenny is 7.
Yeah, it's amazing. Kilkenny came on, cameo kind of in the last, I think he's actually probably only started the one game, wasn't it? But he just shows you exactly what Dublin missed in the first few games and what they need. Like, he is absolutely, like, I was watching the game, he's enormous now. Like, he's so physically strong. Like, his back muscles, you know, and his neck muscles. Like, he is just, he's bursting out of jersey, literally. But his ability, like, there's this basketball parlance where, you know, they look to swing the ball left and right. So we've spoken about this, you know. So they wear out a defence by having to run left, right, left, right, left, right. So you either kick the ball or you run left to right. And his ability to run left and right has been absolutely unbelievable. To carry the ball, to punch holes, and to never lose the ball.
Yeah.
Like, he just doesn't lose the ball, which is just fantastic. Like, I mean, he's very rarely dispossessed. And then he pops up with a couple of scores.
It's a bit like the Ireland rugby team where if we have possession, we're probably going to win the game because we just keep it and keep it and keep it and don't give it away.
Yeah.
And at the moment, the Dubs are able to just keep the ball for 60, 65% of the game. So you need to score goals every time you get it because they're just going to chip away at you.
They've made a massive progress since the Donegal game all those years ago. I remember chatting to Paddy Andrews about it, and he said that the big thing that they focused on was their sense of panic that day, that they tried to go for goals way too early, and they were trying to kick impossible scores, and they got more and more and more frustrated, and they gave the ball away more and more times. So they just completely focused down on, okay, when we're in this situation, what exactly do we do? And it's not like there's a shot clock. Of course, there's not a shot clock, but their ability from the basketball idea of, as I say, moving the ball from left to middle to right at speed, be it by hand or foot, or by running it. And with him, you've a guy that literally, when you give him the ball, you're pretty confident that he isn't going to lose the ball.
Why is he not higher up in the list? Or is this because he hasn't played enough this year?
It's probably just because he hasn't played enough. I think he probably would go way higher on the list after a couple of more games.
Is he their most important player?
I think after Cluxton...
Outfield player.
I think, well, I wouldn't say he's the most important. I think Fenton is the most important. Fenton is the Rolls Royce of that team.
Mm-hmm. He's no question about it. Fenton is their best footballer. I think he is. But
I think he's also massively important.
He is. Well, he definitely is more. Mostly, yeah. But is that because of his footballing talent? Or, like, I guess as a midfielder, your role is also absolutely vital.
I think it's his footballing talent, but also, even in the league, he has come up with some big scores at vital times.
You should do your bit for Kerry football and power rank the Dubs as individuals. To just insert into the group the individual dynamic as opposed to the group dynamic, because all they want to be is the best footballer on Owen's list, the best top five Dubs. Just
well, to be honest with you, if I was picking the list, it just would be 10 Dublin players because they're a far superior county to the rest of us.
But how would you order them, Owen?
That's such a tricky thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You get that out there now, and they'll post that up on the dressing ball. They'll start sharing that in their WhatsApp groups, and all of a sudden, the five in a row is blown.
Yeah, it is. Just a little bit of inner conflict.
They put the I in team.
I heard Kieran Kilkenny thinks he's a better footballer than Brian Fenton. No, that's a joke. That is not true. Just to clarify that.
Can somebody just tweet that there?
Yeah, quote, unquote. So I went for Donal Kilgan at 6. I knew you.
Where is he from?
Oh, there he is there. Now, look. Well, I have to say, like, I mean, this
no
guy
one's filled a number 6 jersey like that in your in about 20 years for you guys.
Yeah, but that's true, yeah. He has been probably the most underrated player. And I'm not just saying this because he's from Meath, but this guy has been absolutely, utterly fantastic in the last 5, 6, 7 seasons. Like, I mean, he's very rarely beaten. And I'd love someone to just actually do the stats on the men he marks. Because he's marked some of the best. He has literally played cornerback, fullback, you know, the other corner, halfback, leftback, right halfback. Like, he's wherever there's an issue, Meath and Meath management have said, right, you're our man to take X, Y, Z, whoever it is. And it's probably been to the detriment of his game, to be honest.
I was just about to ask, when they don't have an issue, where has he played? Where did they get the best out of him?
6.
6, right.
Like, he is fantastic at coming forward. There was a spell in the Kildare game. We had to Kildare game, no?
This year, no.
Yeah.
No. A wise decision.
Yeah. Well, it was a wise decision.
I was looking at it
absolutely
going, we're too far ahead too early here. We were too far ahead too early.
But he, in the second half, all Kildare needed was to get a score. Or one or two, you know. They just needed, they got 1 point.
The story
they
of our
just
life,
needed
Anthony.
To get a score and get a kick out and face a kick out because it was torrential. It was nasty. And he intercepted 2 or 3 balls. And at one stage he ran with Mulick, Tommy Mulick, who's a big man.
Yeah.
And he stuck with him. And it was literally like, you know, taking candy from a child. He literally just took the ball out of his hands. And Mulick, you could see kind of Mulick kind of turn around and he just kind of threw a hand at him and he was just gone. And he came up the pitch. He's so calm on the ball. He's got great pace, great strength. And I think he's going to be a big, big leader for them this year. I think I was really impressed, and I'm not to put the Houdini at taste, but I was impressed by Meade against Kildare, I have to say.
Yeah,
they're creating massive amounts of chances. Like the only kicks, I think their actual efficiency rate that day was at 20-something%, 23%. So the amount, like, I mean, Kildare people can't say, oh, we were pipped at the end. Meade should have won by 10 points. So he definitely goes in there, I think, from... point of view also to watch this year.
I'm Googling everybody's age here. Kieran Kilkenny is only 18 months older than Dermot O'Connor. I would have said that, like, you know, Dermot O'Connor is still technically a young player, but actually he's not really. He was 24 recently enough, so at the start of January. Donald Keoghan is 27, but I also didn't realise that he's got a PhD in pharmaceutical and medicinal chemistry from the RCSI. That guy's smart.
Yeah, he's no dozer.
No.
Would he get into any team in the country?
Yes.
Including Dublin.
He's in the top 10 footballers in the country in our list.
I think he will.
What are you talking about? This is the power rankings of the official top 10 footballers in the country.
I see, he's trying to come around the side here to question
my... Come on.
I think he would.
He's number 6 on his list.
And I think most people would say... Like, I mean, you would have no doubt. Like, whoever you're marking, I'd say, right, go in there and just do a job on him. And you'd be confident.
In this ultimate... If you're going by his list, Stephen Clarkson doesn't get into the best team in the country. So it's not a stupid question.
Stephen Clarkson is not in the top 10 footballers according to Anthony at the moment.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, like, if you're picking a team right now, are you actually, sorry to change subject here, are you actually saying to me that Niall Morgan will be your starting goalkeeper?
If you had everyone? No.
Exactly. So that's why I asked the question. It's not a stupid question.
Stupidest question of the morning so far. What's next? Who's number 5? Number 5, James McCarthy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he probably even needs to go a little bit higher up. But has his form dipped this year? No, not really. Like, I mean, he's a guy, he's been on the go now, playing at such a level for the last number of years. He's in that Fenton kind of just Rolls Royce type thing. He just blows guys out of the way, makes the right decisions, kicks a few scores, gets back, does a savage amount of work.
I think he suffers a little bit in terms of the public perception because he doesn't have a single position in that he's always brilliant no matter where he plays, and he can play anywhere in 5 or 6 places.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a nightmare. If you're a 10 or a 12 or an 8 or a 9, you see him coming on to you, you're just like... Oh, no, not really. You know it's going to be a tough day.
Just a reminder, it's 8:28 a.m. this Tuesday morning. You're listening to, if you're just listening to us on offtheball.com, it's OTBAM. We're running through the top 10 footballers in the country. It's your sports breakfast show here on Off The Ball. If you want to get in touch with us, you can leave a comment wherever you are streaming this or listening to it. You can also listen to the show live every morning on offtheball.com. Just hit listen, minimise and go about your morning. Anthony Moyles is with us. Number 4 here, I think this is a bit controversial. Where the hell is Cormac Costello, the most dangerous footballer in the country at the moment? You've got Paul Mannion in ahead of him.
Yeah, because, and this is going to be, I'm still not convinced.
Really?
Yeah.
I think this is the season that it's like, 10 years of promise, we've been hearing about this, and all of a sudden...
Yeah, and you know what, I hope it is for him, because to be fair to the lad, I'd say it's been a very... Okay, well, how frustrating can it be when you're just picking up All-Irelands, even if you're 24 in the panel? But it can be, right? If you're a winner and you're a person who wants to get on the pitch, if you're being given 2 minutes here, 1 minute there, after being heralded as the next big thing, that has to be frustrating. You know, it has to be probably a little bit even, you know, kind of depressing at times, where you're kind of saying to yourself, what exactly do I have to do?
Yeah.
You're looking at fellas like Conor Callaghan just coming out and all of a sudden getting in ahead of you. So for Costello, what age is he?
24.
Well, there you go.
Like, he's 25 in July.
He's been around a long time now since that minor breakthrough with very little game time.
Yeah.
Not even that much game time in the league. Like, you know, this is kind of been...
No, there were years when you thought that he was going to start every league game. I was like, no, not even in the matchday squad for some of the league games.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe he just had to grow up, and, you know, that happens at times. Maybe fellas, physically, I think he has grown up. Like, I mean, he's a much bigger guy now from a physical point of view than he was, obviously, three or four years ago.
A bit of MMA training as well. He's got all the holds.
Yeah, he definitely has one of those. I just think he is a lethal player. He's a confidence player. You can see him now, his confidence is up. But, you know, like, okay, the Higgins goal, I would be very, very disappointed if I was Higgins and if I was Horan from a defensive point of view. No one ever doubled up and helped them. So, but he has done enough in games to kick scores and everything else. He seems to be a bit more serious about his game. He seems to be a bit more committed about his game.
Yeah.
I'd say Gavin wanted him to make the transition from, oh, I could be the next big thing, to, I want to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And that is a big step. you know, in the psychology of a player.
That's the picture on screen there. Bernard Brogan is there. This is 2017. Bernard Brogan's there. Connolly is there. I think Conn is hiding. Paddy Andrews is there as well.
Yeah.
I didn't realise this. In 2014, in the All-Ireland quarterfinal, Costello was a sub against Monaghan. He was selected a corner forward against Donegal in the semi-final. So maybe he got blamed a little bit in the managerial mind. Did he start that game?
I think he did start that game.
Yeah.
I think if I remember correctly, he did. But that would have been a hard... I don't think it was down to one game. I think Mannion has been playing so well and he is at such a level. Again, if I was, you know, an opposition manager and you're looking at six forwards, I'm probably more worried about Mannion than I am about Costello. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I really have to get this guy nailed down, because Costello's a bit more of a, you know, he's in the pocket, he's doing a bit more damage inside, whereas Mannion can do that. He can come in, but he can also roam. He's got that unbelievable pace where he gets it, he just drops his shoulder and he's gone by you, and he's creating havoc all over the place. Costello's a bit more, if it doesn't go for him, it doesn't go for him. You know, he's not necessarily bringing in lots of fellas around him, but that's what you don't want him to do that either from his position. But he's most certainly more of a threat than Dean Rock is from outfield play.
Yeah.
You know, like Rock obviously primarily there just to kick frees and everything else. Of course, he's a great player. But he's bringing something else that McMenamin, you know, has kind of waned a bit. O'Gara obviously is a different type of player. So he is someone they need, to be honest. With Bernard gone or going, he is someone that they need. They need to unearth someone. And it's very hard to bring a 17, 18, 19-year-old in there and expect him just to take all of that on. Even with the plaudits, all of a sudden you can imagine, you know, if you start getting in front of the hill, you're kicking scores, they'll build you up. Your head could completely blow. So they need someone like Costello who's been around.
If you consider the all-time greats who are kind of gone from starting in the forward line, Bernard Brogan, Connolly, Paul Flynn, probably not starting this season at the moment either. Like, they're all-time great footballers who will be in any conversation about any greatest Dublin team ever.
Yeah, was pushing on. Probably, I don't know what it, look, I mean, O'Gara, even from just being around, you know, those guys have been on the road a long time now. Have to imagine Costello has the bit between his teeth. But look, it's a big difference still from... I tell you what's going to be great, really interesting, to see how he performs in these last two league games.
Yeah.
Because this is when you really get to the, as we always say...
That's three league games. They'll make a league final. They will make a league final.
Well, the weather starts to get a bit better. You can kind of... Peg that form to the rest of the year. Okay, so Mannion makes it number four. Costello not on the list at the moment. David Clifford at number three, eating the Tango Twister.
Yeah, S&C man won't be too happy about that. You'd imagine the dietitian. I think he just has to get in because...
Talkie's going to play this weekend.
Yeah.
Is that accurate, Owen? Is that what your scribes or your...
Happy mention for the last couple of weeks that he's a couple of weeks away. So you got to throw him in at some stage. It will be kind of a bit of a shock now if they didn't actually make the league final. So you do wonder, do they wrap him up in cotton wool for another 2 weeks and just put him inside in Croke Park against the Dubs and just take that game incredibly seriously from a Kerry perspective? Or do you let him kind of ratchet up the minutes and then whatever happens in the league final happens in the league final? It's probably the latter, is it?
I think he needs game time. He needs game time. Even you know, no matter what you're doing on the training pitch, you need game time. You just need to get out and just get that sharpness in. I can't wait to see the two of them. We were saying last year, O'Shea has got a bit of size, Clifford, but the two of them have really, really... I can't actually wait to see how he looks, because I'd say he's just been building upon, obviously, his natural physique and then his ability. It's a very exciting time.
Paul Gainey and James O'Donoghue are off this list, who were there last year.
They'll probably be fighting for their starting places in the Kerry team this year. Probably not Paul Gainey, but there are some whispers that, you know, he's...
Do you not think Gainey will make it?
Without question, I think he should be starting for Kerry, but I do think that he's going to have a battle on his hands to hold on to his jersey, which is mad, because I think David Clifford's hopped above him in the pecking order as a result of last year's form is because of the way Tommy Walsh going. Is he more of a starter now because of the dynamic that he brings to the team?
But could you not have Walsh, Gainey and Clifford inside?
That would be my starting full forward line. To be honest with you, maybe I'm getting way too sentimental here, but I would love to see a Gainey, O'Donoghue, Clifford full forward line, but it's just impossible to tell if O'Donoghue will ever get back to the level he was at. I think that is a full forward line that can cause Dublin problems if they get back to that level. I still think that is a key, and I'm sure people are tired of listening to me saying it. I'm tired of saying it. That if James O'Donoghue gets fully fit, Kerry have one hell of a chance, and that is the full forward line: O'Donoghue, Gainey, Clifford. I just think Paul Gainey, it was unbelievable 2 years ago. Last year wasn't his best year. He just needs to turn it on again this year, just to ensure that he's playing every single game for the full game.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent full forward line, but I think the Tommy Walsh, if you're
James O'Donoghue's 28.
Yeah, yeah.
There's loads of time left.
No, there's no bother with O'Donoghue getting back. From a time perspective and everything else, it's probably just he has had a number of injuries. Can he come back to exactly as high a level he was? Like, that is going to be ferocious competition. The Tommy Walsh thing, I think, is an enormous. It's an X factor that they haven't had in a while, in the sense of, okay, you've seen a lot of people are trying to do the high ball into the Dublin defence. You know, their teams are definitely trying. You can see it in the league. They're trying to put it in.
Even accidentally. Come,
yeah, exactly. But they are Cross definitely Cameron. Trying to do it. And Walsh just gives you that presence.
So you bring back Roy O'Carroll. Is that what you do if you're Dublin?
I would.
You're like secretly.
Absolutely.
Like a Frankenstein monster.
Against, yeah. the big reveal.
Yeah.
That works against everybody. Like, I mean, if Galway look at the little inkling of hope they got in that All-Ireland semi-final last year, was maybe that high ball on top of Stephen Cluxton that resulted in a goal. Like, Rory O'Carroll works against that as well. It's not just the Tommy Walsh factor here.
You're right.
I just don't see any downside to bringing back O'Carroll.
I don't either. You've got to get him in the squad and see if he can give you something. Because otherwise, if you don't and you lose because of a high ball in, for the rest of your life, you'll be like, I just made that phone call.
Yeah.
So number one is Brian Fenton, which isn't really that much of a shock at the moment.
Well, we skipped our man,
Sean O'Shea. We bundled Clifford and Sean O'Shea together.
There's no more of this.
This guy's going under the radar, apparently.
Go on.
Yeah, he is. He's under the radar. There's no doubt about it. Nah, he's just, I'm not even going to talk about it. He's just absolutely lethal at the moment. I cannot wait to see him going. Fenton, I've watched this guy really closely in a couple of league games. He's been double-teamed. He's got a serious amount of attention. Against Mayo, they try to rough him up very early, very often. And he has an unbelievable ability for a big man to go from 0 to 100 very, very quickly. Like, his ability just to get away from you. Like, people kind of see it on, even at a game, and you think, oh, he's just kind of, he's just running. But he's leaving fellas for dead behind him whilst carrying the ball.
The athleticism is sensational. He was 26 2 weeks ago, last week.
He's peaking.
He could have another decade if he wanted it.
He could.
Who would you? He wanted another 10 years. Yeah. He could, because of his, like, he just looks like, he obviously looks after himself.
Yeah.
It'd be about motivation at that point and the rest of his life. But, like,
who's his midfield partner this year? I like to look at Darren Gavin.
No,
not having it. Not buying into the league.
I think you go back to your tried and tested. I think McCauley. I think McCauley is going to be your impact guy. I think McCarthy is your man in midfielders.
And you don't
big
think
physical, like, what you need in there as well. I think Fenton is a guy who you could chop at and he won't react. But you need someone who's going to, that if you do it, you're going to get a box in the mouth. And I'm not saying McCarthy will do that, but McCarthy will be absolutely. You just won't mess with him in there because you'll know it's going to come back at you. Fenton, I think, will play you relatively clean. He'll be physical with you, but he won't. But McCarthy, so I don't know. You need a bit of yin and yang in there. And I think that's what you get with the two of them.
It's part of it because of the fact that I'm just looking, you look at the half-back line and O'Sullivan's form may pick up and, that sixth jersey may be as solid as ever. And then you got McCaffrey and Small out of sight of him, that you can't really be putting James McCarthy back into that half-back line. You just have to have him in midfield.
If Keenan Sullivan doesn't pick up, Johnny Cooper's been playing well there.
Well, that's it.
Exactly. Then you stick Rory O'Carroll in full back and
game on.
That's a scary, it's stupid to even refer to Dublin as scary anymore, but
it's a pretty solid six.
Yeah, it's grand.
Or eight.
It's not bad.
Yeah. You'd be happy enough.
If Rory O'Carroll comes back, are the Dubs stronger than last year?
Yes.
If he comes back.
It
depends how the forwards are all playing, because that's the kind of unknown at this point.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Anthony. We're in the competition at the moment. Favourite Irish goal of all time? Do you have a favourite Irish soccer goal? Pick. You can go for one of the vintage ones. Owen's like, I don't remember any of those Ray Houghton goals.
Yeah. Shane Long is Johnny Giles. For me.
Kevin Sheedy. Oh, actually, Sheedy. Or else Ronnie Whelan against Russia.
Yeah, Ronnie Whelan against Russia was so unexpected, but Chidi was like, we just needed it.
Yeah.
It was like the smell of want off us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, that one will do. It is a brilliant competition running this week on OTBAM. Just use the hashtag OTBAM to enter this wherever you're watching us or listening to us. SSE Airtricity are proud energy partners of the FAI. And to celebrate the launch of the new campaign, this is a new era. This is Generation Green. We have a pair of premium tickets to Mick McCarthy's first home game, Ireland against Georgia, to give away all this week. Not only that, all five winners will go into a draw for the overall prize on Friday, which includes four premium tickets to the game, a hotel stay for all in Dublin, including dinner, and the opportunity for one child to be a flag bearer at the game. To win, we want you to tell us about your favourite Irish goal, who scored it, and why it was so good. Tweet us, send us the video, comment on your Facebook or YouTube, enter wherever you want, and we'll pick a winner every morning before 9:30 a.m. Now, Graham Hunter is with us to talk about the Zinedine Zidane issue. Graham, I did not predict this, did not think this was going to happen. How did this happen? What the hell is going on? Why does Zinedine Zidane want to go back?
It's like an episode of Friends, isn't it? Ross and Rachel, I don't know the characters' names. Zidane and Florentino were only on a break, right? Overwhelming love for the club seems to be the main answer. But if you want the political answer, Zidane won the power battle Ajer when he said in the build-up to, let's say, spring last year, and he was saying to Florentino, this is how I want to change things. I don't want you talking about Kepa or Courtois anymore. I want Kehler and who's that kid? Oh yeah, Luca Zidane. I want him as the number two goalkeeper. And I want to clear this fella out, Bale, and I want to do this and that and the next thing. He wanted the mandate to step into the breach of this no director of football that the club suffer from, in my point of view. And the post to which Zidane should have been appointed yesterday rather than coach. But when that battle was being argued out with the president, it turns out Florentino Perez last year got a bit complacent. He thought Zidane is enjoying this so much, he's so attached to the club, that I can reassert myself as president. I can say no to him on this issue and that issue. And by May 31st, after beating Liverpool and Kiev, when Zidane walked away, it turns out he really meant, and this is a thread of every conversation you must have about Zidane. From the moment he took over in January 16, after Benitez was sacked, until the moment he left, he was an absolute rarity. And this might be less interesting to off-the-ball viewers and listeners because it's about the pitch. But we know he won a league and he won three Champions League as head coach. When he speaks, and I think this doesn't just affect viewers and fans and journalists, but it affects the players, he tells the truth, Chair. It's really radical to say that about a lead football person. But when Zidane answers questions, you get frankness. He will confront issues. He'll tell you when he's angry. He will turn on the charm. He uses wit. But when he left on May 31st, he said things like, maybe I'll be back after a rest. This isn't goodbye. It's only hasta luego. See you later. He pointed out that he felt that a short, sharp shock for the squad was vital. He laid trails, which were picked up yesterday. And I agree with you, because there was a will from Florentino Perez, but not the rest of his board, to try and repatriate Jose Mourinho. When it became clear to Florentino Perez that he had no support around the club for that idea, apparently, according to Zidane, the first phone call to Zidane convinced him. And that was last week. And they've been building on this announcement. I think one or two of the players knew or suspected going into the Valladolid game at the weekend. None of us in the media, not one person had it as a breaking story. Zidane will be appointed next week. By yesterday, it began to become clear. But you're right. It is an interesting turn of events on a personal basis, just because of my admiration for what he's like as a person, what he was like as a footballer, and what he was definitely like as somebody who can oversee a project. I'm absolutely, absolutely thrilled to have Zidane back, and particularly in comparison to Jose Mourinho, Chair.
Is this the type of thing that... this seems to be the type of thing that used to happen with Real Madrid in like the 70s and 80s, where a manager would walk away and would come back. You know, I think Toshak had two spells. There was a bunch of other people around that time who had two spells.
Capello, two single seasons, two titles. You know, it does happen a lot at the club.
Why is that?
I think that it is a very alluring club. Whether you are a fan, whether you know you don't like them particularly because Liverpool's your passion or Barcelona's your passion, I suppose name your clubs who look at the behemoth and resent them. I think that the majority of people who get associated with the Bernabeu, with the history, with constantly winning, there is something, a layer of affection or devotion, which goes above the salary packet and which goes above the easy life that certain stars can have under this president. You can request a little bit of time off, a little bit of time to be with your sponsors. You can play golf constantly like Gareth Bale, which isn't particularly good for his musculature or his injury record, and you can get away with it. Above and beyond the easy life, there is something inspirational about being associated with Real Madrid. Anybody who says there isn't is either underinformed or bitter, because you go to the training ground, you go to the stadium, you sniff the history. If you want to become part of it, that's an enormously alluring thing. You're treated well, you're paid well. It's a little bit, no, gosh. It's a little bit like, for Bond fans, it's a little bit like Smersh. Everything's great until you fail a mission and then you're out. But you, instead of being fed to the sharks, you can be repatriated and brought back. And everybody who goes into Real Madrid knows that the penalty for failure is very high. But once you're out, it does not mean that people lose affection or regard for you. And most people who are asked to come back do come back.
How deep-rooted are some of the conflicts we've seen over the past couple of weeks, really, Graham? Like Bale versus the entire dressing room, Sergio Ramos versus Florentino Perez, as we've seen over the last couple of days. Are these the sort of things that Zinedine Zidane and just him being there can fix?
First of all, it's not so bad with poor old Gareth Bale. Some of the players take the mickey out of him a little bit, but the way in which the remarks by, for example, Courtois were reported takes out of proportion what the rest of the squad think about Gareth Bale. There is a division. He's only got one or two to whom he's close, but to call it outright, it's a fractious thing. And it divides the dressing room because he doesn't have Spanish, because he doesn't involve himself greatly in anything outside the training ground. But there have been many hundreds of top footballers who've lived that way. The difficulty, I suppose, is when it all layers one on top of the other. He lives in his chosen way and he's either not fit or he's playing and he's not playing particularly well. Then you get an issue. Zidane wanted Bale out. So I think that to twist the kaleidoscope a little bit on, now there is a problem because Bale knows that his coach doesn't fancy him and will ask the club to clear him out in the summer, but he's got a contract till 2022. That is a really big club issue. Whether it's necessarily an issue on the playing side between now and May, I'm not so convinced. The last time Zidane came in his first 17 games, he scored, I think the club scored 57 goals. They won't do that because there's no Cristiano Ronaldo. 114, drew 2, lost 1. Right in front of him now is an injury list. There are problems with Isco. And they've also got Getafe 6 points behind, breathing down the neck, and Atleti 5 points ahead in third place. But the fixture list is beautiful. Number one, they'll beat Celta this weekend. Some of them will have 2 weeks off, but Zidane will have 2 weeks to plan. And then beyond then and the end of the season, they've probably got 2 testing games. I mean that, 2 testing games. Valencia away and Getafe away. Other than that, Zidane can imprint on this end to the season. But that's the risk he's taken. You pointed out that there are some flaws, there are some problems, and he doesn't want to take over and screw up the remainder of the season. So there is a level of risk. I agree with you.
Graham, do we know if Zinedine Zidane was approached or if he was interested in any of the other jobs that were spoken about over the last couple of months? Manchester United, for one, Chelsea, rather more tenuously.
I didn't believe that there were concerted moves to bring Zidane into United. I also have trouble seeing him in a country where he's not fluent. He has some smatterings of English. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I have a major, major concern about the idea of Zidane either coaching or handling the media in English. And I think he felt the same. About Juventus, I don't know. There are clear signs there that we seem to be looking at the end of the Allegri era. I think that there's a mutual, unless they pull it back from the brink, there is probably going to be an opportunity there. And I can imagine Zidane being back in Turin. But we go back to the original point. Real Madrid has a special hold on him. I think he won his power battle. I think he's come in knowing that when Zidane says to the president, this is what I want, then that's what he gets. And it's good. I was told by somebody that Madrid used to consult on signings. He's an ex-player. That the number one priority in Zinedine Zidane's life are his three boys who are playing football. And that he will make almost any personal decision based on that. So I expect to see Luka Zidane promoted. I expect to see Zidane showing that this is the club that he wanted above all others. Whether he was approached or not is now just dust on the floor.
Was there no temptation to ride off into the sunset with the greatest short managerial career in the history of the game and go, yeah, I came, I saw, I won everything, I left...
Well, he said in May, I want to keep on linking May 31st to yesterday. In May 31st, he said, because a couple of months earlier, remember, he said, I want to stay at Real Madrid for years and years. I could finish my coaching career here. And then by May 31st, he was out. And he said at the time, I'm leaving for very specific reasons. I'm not anywhere near tired of coaching. That's been borne true. So I think the temptation is, the answer to your question is no. And while I absolutely believe that there was an opportunity for Florentino Perez to look at his club, look at Zidane's huge, great big armory of talents and the way in which Zidane paved the way for his own success. Because before he became coach to inherit from Benitez, he was the one planning the squad. He was the one persuading guys to come. He was the one advising the president who should be sold and who should be bought. And it worked very well. When he took over, he reaped the rewards of his own harvest. It was his work. When he went away, he was coaching well, but nobody was doing that work underneath. And I think Zidane should have been offered, I think Zidane should have been persuaded at all costs to try and become the Johan Cruyff, the consigliere, the technical director, I don't care what you call it, the living football brain to complement Florentino Perez's business and commerce skills and his ambitions. And I think that that's a missed opportunity. But no, I think there was no temptation to say, thank you, I'll sign off on that project. I came in 2.5 years, 3 Champions League. No, Zidane is hungry to be back and working. I suppose the surprise is that it's now rather than June when he could start with a clean slate, get players out. No danger of what one talked about, the hangover, the aftermath of both the Lopetegui and the Solari eras. Impacting on him. So I guess we salute him as a brave man this morning, right?
It is the most amazing Real Madrid season of all time when you consider all the way back to just before the World Cup, where the entire country's World Cup is blown to smithereens. That manager gets burned out, his replacement gets burned out, and they go back to the guy they had before it all happened. Is there any sense anywhere of any smattering of guilt that Florentino Perez has ruined an entire country's chance of winning the World Cup?
One of the things above your journalistic integrity that I've always loved is your sense of humour. You and Owen, everybody producing, everybody watching knows the answer to that question already, so I will duck it or say no.
Graham, good stuff. Thanks a million.
See you, lads.
Graham Hunter giving us some thoughts on that is a remarkable, it is the most Real Madrid story of all time, and yet I'm still a little bit shocked by it.
Yeah, I don't think many
speed, it's all like just this acceleration. Like normally like 2 years wandering, having the crack. He didn't even get to like, maybe he was. Maybe he was photographed in the Spanish tabloids on the beach in a little pair of Speedos going, I'm Zidane, I can do what I want.
Yeah, like the thing was, the Jose Mourinho story would have made no sense, but perfect sense because it's Real Madrid. It's like, okay, let's get used to this ridiculous thing that Jose Mourinho is going to come back and Florentino Perez, for some reason, still respects him as a manager. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, an even more Real Madrid story comes out of the woodwork, and it's... And it's anything Zidane coming back. It's great. Like I'm very, very happy for Real Madrid and for football in general that Zidane is back.
Me too. Actually, I'm kind of interested in seeing what happens now. And as opposed to Lopetegui seemed like a bit of a wiener, and the Solari thing was like, that's obviously not going to last. So,
do you want to put a ticking time bomb on how long the Eden Hazard to Real Madrid story now lasts? Do they just wrap it up early in the summer, or do they do they just drag the life out of the transfer story?
Straight away, I think. Because he can get what he wants now. He can just do whatever he wants, right? That's the whole point of the power battle. His kid better be a good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Or is it like one of the best jobs in football, being the reserve Real Madrid goalkeeper? So you play in the Copa del Rey and you play a game here and there, and you play the dead rubber in the group stages of the Champions League, and you get paid 2-3 million a year for 15 years. It's not bad.
Or maybe his kid doesn't want to be a superstar.
Well, there you go. He can always just inherit the cash. Jimmy McCullough has a great entry for our competition. Matty Holland versus Portugal in 2000 for the World Cup qualifiers. Amazing volley. We took 2 points from Portugal and Holland away, which gave us the confidence to go forward and qualify unbeaten for the playoffs. Keane also good in that game as well. That campaign, I wouldn't mind watching some of those games again. That Holland game, those two Portugal games. Those two Holland games were brilliant. In the 2-2 draw in the Amsterdam Arena, which is famous in retrospect for the fact that they had to eat pizza, and Keane has a strop because, do you think Amsterdam's eating pizza? And obviously, no was the answer. But we scored two brilliant, brilliant goals. There's a header from Jason McAteer, and there's also just Robbie Keane. Or is it the other way around? Sorry, it's Robbie Keane header, and it's a Jason McAteer whack. Both goals feature in the Carlsberg ad as we win the World Cup that following summer. Anyway, competition time. It is a brilliant competition we're running for you all week on hashtag OTBAM. Do you remember that game, no?
Yeah, vaguely.
But those goals.
I remember.
Not imprinted.
If you ask me to sort of go through step by step what happened in those games, not a chance. Do I remember the jubilation when it happened? Yes.
Richard Dunn is sensational in that campaign, and particularly in that away game against Holland. He's like makes a last ditch tackle to keep it at 2-2. Because we were 2-0 up early in the game and just couldn't hold on. Drop back and made defensive substitutions and drop back. And then, this Holland team, who are pretty good, scored twice against us. Anyway, brilliant competition running for you all this week on OTBAM. Just use the hashtag OTBAM. SSE Airtricity are proud energy partners of the FAI to celebrate the launch of the new campaign. This is a new era. This is Generation Green. We've got a pair of premium tickets to Mick McCarthy's first home game, Ireland against Georgia, to give away all this week. Not only that, all five winners going to a draw for the overall prize on Friday, which includes 4 premium tickets to the game, a hotel stay for everybody in Dublin, including dinner, and the opportunity for one child to be a flag bearer at the game. To win, we want you to tell us about your favourite Irish goal, who scored it and why it was so good. You can tweet us, you can send us the videos, you can comment on our Facebook or YouTube. Enter wherever you want and we'll pick a winner every morning before 9:30. John Duggan, good morning to you.
Jerry and Owen.
Do you have a...
Welcome to Chatham.
Do you have a favourite Irish goal of all time?
Ronnie Whelan, Hanover, Euro 88 against Russia.
That's a good answer. It is a good answer.
That was the moment that, like, we beat England in the first game, which was the best moment in Irish soccer history and one of the best moments in Irish sporting history. And then we played Russia off the park and we conceded a late goal. That was, to me, the zenith of Irish football in ways that, okay, we reached the World Cup final, a quarter finals in 1990 against Italy in the host country. But that moment against Russia, the final of the Euros, and it beat by Holland, and we were lucky to go out to Holland. So That it came off a shin, it went in the top corner, and it was just that moment. And impossible at that moment, as a young boy, I remember very well.
Yeah, I think that the goal coming off your shin shouldn't disqualify you for greatness. It's like Kev, the one that, remember Kev scores that amazing goal, and everybody in the office was like, "Did you mean it?" He's like, "I mean, I was shooting in the direction of the goals." Of course, I meant it. What was it? No, it's a West Brom volley.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of a different goal entirely.
There's not that many, Kev.
I thought you were kind of like winding him up there when you said, "Do you remember that great goal that Kev scored off a shin?" Oh wait, it went over the crossbar against Spain, the penalty follow-up.
Oh god, that did go off a shin. Mm. That was important that it went off a shin. Mm. But I think that a great goal when a professional tries to score should count as a great goal, as opposed to...
Okay, well, this is about your favourite Irish goal, which really
has to be the best. Yeah.
When it comes to Irish sporting moments, it's about what was your greatest feeling attached to the Irish football team. Naturally, it's a goal. Like, if you actually wind it out to just moments in general, people could say Richard Dunn in Russia,
or you could say Paddy Bonner save.
Exactly. I just think that
when were you born?
The shin part is irrelevant.
When were you born?
Very personal question. I was born in 1994.
All right, so all of that stuff is just like ancient history to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. But, like, it's sort of part of your upbringing because you can't not have heard or have seen all those moments from a very, very young age. Like,
do they get rolled out quite a bit, or do you see them on YouTube?
Rolled out a lot.
Are they, yeah?
On television, yeah. Pre-YouTube, definitely, yeah.
On, like, Reeling in
Reeling
the
in
Years.
Reeling in the Years. Any Irish kind of 90-minute documentary on RT that it's like, you know, Ireland's Greatest Moment or whatever, on kind of like Sunday nights or around Christmas, year after year after year. So Ray Houghton's goal is almost as much a part of your upbringing as Saipan is.
Yeah, well, you're only eight. So we go back to John? Yep. Yeah, that's much better, John. Loud and clear.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of Wi-Fi. There's like press as photographers here, so we had to just go onto the dongle, and we're now back in the dongle. So all will be good now for the rest of the week.
Yeah, a bit of dongle action always good to rescue the things. How is Cheltenham today? Because obviously yesterday was grand, it was low key. There wasn't that many people behind you. Today it's early, but fever pitch.
Yeah, it's like I was walking around the course and I posted some photos to Instagram and off the ball yesterday with this, like you love a lawn, like there's this winner's enclosure that looked like something out of Utopia, and the course was just beautiful. This beautiful, like, kind of green bowl, but there was nobody here. Now everybody's filtering in. The crowds will be let in about 10:30. It's raining. It's going to be pretty wintry and blustery for the next few hours. It's going to clear up later in the day, but as Johnny Ward was saying on our Cheltenham show yesterday, they haven't raced on this ground all winter. So it's going to be soft ground, but it's not going to be bottomless ground. So it's just going to be fascinating to see what happens. And like the great thing about it is now, guys, right at this moment, I'm right with my opinions. The jockeys have all their hopes and dreams. Everything is intact. The trainers, the owners. The beauty of all sport is the unpredictability of it. And I think horse racing is one of those sports that lends itself to massive unpredictability. If you even remember Annie Power 4 years ago going for that race, which I think would have given Ruby Walsh a four-timer on the day, and then she fell at the final flight. So we just don't know what's going to happen in the champion hurdle today. We don't know what's going to happen in any races. We do know that Cheltenham is happening, and it's happening from 1:30.
Yeah. What on a day like today, again, it's not that... It's not that hard to predict that some of the favourites are going to win, because you know that's why they're favourite at this point. But from your perspective, you tend to look for some of the outsiders. Is that right?
Yeah, when I was looking at the prices, really, and I'm kind of looking at some of the races here. So we have, 18 runners in the last race. Batty Ward, I think there's a very big chance. He's like he's under 3-1. The second last race has got, 20 runners. A Plutard, once again, very good chance for Rachel Blackmore, but about a 6-1 shot. That's very skinny odds. So I'm looking at the way I kind of like did my punting strategy today was I looked at a couple of horses that I think will win, Apples Jade and Benny DeJeu, and then I looked at each way possibilities in the other races, because the Supreme Novices Hurdle and the Arkle race, they're not easy races to call. So I went for a couple of what I think are winners, and then I'm looking for value, because ultimately, if I can get a horse that finishes in the top three or whatever at 16-1, it's better than, you know, having a horse that's really, really good, but it is a, you know, a loser at 4-1. So that's my kind of thinking. So I'm kind of trying to have a kind of a solid win element to my strategy, but also an each way element to my strategy, because ultimately we're trying to find value and unearth some overpriced horses here today.
Yeah, and end with a profit over the week as opposed to loss. We like
yeah,
that.
Profit. Yeah, profit. Profit. You'll never go poor, folks. You know, profit will never make you poor.
Tell me, okay, so did you say Benny DeJeu? You like Benny DeJeu as a winner today?
Yeah, and my nap is Apples Jade. So Apples Jade is my nap in the champion hurdle at 3:30, just under about 2-1 at the moment. Apples Jade has won all four starts between 2 and 3 miles this season by 73 lengths, a combined total of 73 lengths. I don't believe in this stuff about she's not great at Cheltenham. She won the Mares Hurdle here when she probably wasn't running as well as she is now. She hasn't run as well this season as she did when she was 4, and she was narrowly beaten in the Triumph Hurdle here. Then she went and won by 41 lengths over 2 miles in the Juvenile Hurdle at Aintree on soft ground. And I don't think horses have been able to live with her. Like Wicklow Brave is a good yardstick, was not able to live with her earlier in the season, and she's beaten all the geldings. I think she's a really good chance of winning the champion hurdle. I think Boubard Dare was disappointing at Christmas. I don't think he's beaten much in the race in the last couple of years. You can't knock the fact that he's a dual champion hurdler. Lorena, we just don't know. And if you're backing a horse at 4-1, you're just, you know, she might win, but you just don't know. She's never run against the boys. Of course, you'd have to respect what Ruby and Willie are saying down in Close Sutton, and the fact that you know Ruby's riding her over, say, Melon, for example. We just don't know how good Lorena is, but we do know how good Apples Jade has been this season. So on the evidence of form, I think Apples Jade is the most likely winner of the race. The one that I think is an outsider is Esport Allen, probably a 20-1 shot for Gavin Cromwell. but a five-year-old's 10 not to win champion hurdles. Only happened once since 1985, and 101 horses have tried. So Espoir d'Allan does have a turn of foot, could finish in the frame, but Apples J to me on form on what I've seen is a most solid proposition in the champion hurdle. That's my nap of the day. Benny DeJure, once again, this huge confidence in the Mullins camp about Benny DeJure winning this race for the second year in a row. She's very good horse, first time out. She runs well, fresh, and there's huge confidence. And the confidence, to me, generally in the mare's races, if you look at the ratings, there are one or two or three horses at the top. And the rest of them, even though they might be like they might have Winston name, generally they're not of the standard of the likes of Benny DeJure.
Okay, so their first nap is Apples Jade. Benny DeJure, strong favourite in terms of a win today. Benny DeJure around about 11 to 10, touching evens in and out from that. Apples Jade around about 7 to 4 at the moment. Okay, so they're the two short price horses you like today. What about the outsiders that you're looking for?
Well, then we're going each way on the remaining races. So the first race, the Supreme Novices Hurdle, I've gone for a horse called Vision Donner. Once again, I think there's huge confidence from the stable. Everything that Gordon Elliott has said about the horse, he really likes this horse. I think it's going to be a star possibly of the future. And I think we'll appreciate softer ground that he's got so far. So Vision Donner is about 11 to 1 chance. I think it's got a chance of reaching the frame in the first race. I would not put anybody off Angel's Breath. Angel's Breath has got a massive chance for Nicky Henderson, but it's about a 4 to 1 shot. Once again, I think it's an open race. Would I want to be back in a 4 to 1 shot in what I think is an open race? Probably not. I'd rather back Apples Jade. So I backed Vision Donner each way in the first race, about 11 to 1, the 130 Supreme Officer's Hurdle. The Arkle Chase at 210. I've gone for Duc de Genevre. That's a 7 to 1 shot, William Mullins and Paul Townend. This horse was second behind Sam Crow at Leopardstown in a hurdle race last year. Was a very good hurdler, probably ran over too far at the festival last year. And they changed tactics with him at Boreham Park last time. They ran him over 2.5 miles. He was a front runner, and he demolished the opposition. So I think a change of tactics for Duc de Genevre has put this very, very smart hurdler back in the frame, back in the picture for the Arkle Chase, which once again is an open race. And I think at 7 to 1, Duc de Genevre has a good chance of making the frame. Then the next race is the 250. I've gone for an outsider called Royal Vacation at 35 to 1. Mike Bysshe fell in a novice chase at Kempton, a grade one, a couple of years ago. And the horse that picked up the pieces and won was Royal Vacation for Colin Tizard. And he's a course winner here, and he has won on soft ground. He's been named to the Grand National, but to me, he's way overpriced. And in Racing Post today, Colin Tizard, the trainer, said that he didn't think he had an each-way chance. Like, the horse that stands out in that race that might win by half the track is Manella Rocco, who was second in the Gold Cup behind Sizing John 2 years ago, has beaten Navy River twice at the festival, Manella Rocco. But he's been very disappointing since. Once again, being named to the Grand National, I will probably prefer better ground. But if he came back to his best, he's way better than these Manella Rocco. But the one I liked at a price was Royal Vacation.
It's interesting this morning, John, because I saw Manella Rocco was near the top of the betting. And there's not a single tipster across the newspapers that I've gone through this morning that actually tipped Manella Rocco to win the thing.
There you go. So it's a time former tipping him in the UK, and a couple of other services are tipping him. And look if it's JB McManus colours, and it's a yard that sometimes likes to have a gamble. And there's a bit of money for it, but then I've seen a bit of drift for it as well. So Royal Vacation's the one I've got.
Manella Rocco's around about 8 to 1 at the moment.
Yeah, but like if Manella Rocco is at his best, he will win the race. But you're once again, you're taking that on chance. And I'd rather at 4 times the price, take it on chance that Royal Vacation, who is a little bit of class, can maybe fill the frame of 4 or 5 places here. And then the last two races have gone for two other horses. We have this Close Brothers Novices Handicap Chase at 450. Once again, Rachel Blackmore's got a big chance with Aplutar, probably the favourite, good jumper. Was entered in some of the novice races, so they probably think of a lot of it at Henry de Bromhead's yard. But the one I've gone for, and this is no reflection on me or my personality or my integrity, is a horse called Shady Operator.
Hey.
So this is Joseph O'Brien. This horse beat Ballyward over fences and has got form behind Sharjah. Shady Operator with Mark Walsh in the saddle, I think, could be a little bit better than the race he's in today. He's about 14 to 1 each way. Does need to jump better and does need to travel well. That's probably factored into his price. And the last race, the half five, which is the 4 miler, once again, Ballyward, you can't knock Ballyward. If you're back in Ballyward, it wouldn't put you off whatsoever. Ran well at the festival last year. Woolwell last come out. Patrick Mullins won the race last year. But about 3-1, less than 3-1, to me does not represent value in an 18-runner race over 4 miles where there could be like quarters and that kind of thing. There could be traffic problems. The one I've gone for is Atlanta Ablaze. You need a good jumper in this race. Atlanta Ablaze is a good jumper, had a wind operation, won well the last time, and could reach the frame at 18-1 for Henry Day, who knows how to train old-fashioned chasers, which this horse is. So a lot of the horses at the top of the market, like Angel's Breath, like Ballyward, like a Plutar, I wouldn't put anybody off. They might all win today and I'll have egg on my face or an omelette. But the way I've kind of thought about my strategy is, okay, Appleshead, I think I'll win. Betty DiGio, I think I'll win. And I'm going for each way chances of horses filling the frame in the other races. And if they win, it's a bonus.
John, good stuff. You'll be down at the grandstand for the first race when they go off?
Yeah, I always generally go to the press room and they've got a little bit of a walkway outside where you can watch the race. And like, it literally is sardines. You cannot move. And it's just fantastic. You do get that shiver down the spine when the roar goes up for the Supreme Novices Hurdle at 1:30. It's one of these moments, like every year, you just get that kind of ooh, that kind of nervous feeling. And it's just something that you can't really talk about tangibly, but you just have to be here to experience it, because it is the show and there is no other race meeting like it. Like I've been to a Grand National, but the first race, you just get that roar, and then from then on it is relentless for 4 days, 28 races. There's like boxers punches come at you every half an hour. The great thing is, like, you don't get hurt unless you're getting hurt in the betting ring, but it's something to enjoy. It's something not to get carried away about. But like, And even for all the people who've come over here, they might have come over here for like Tuesday, Wednesday, or they might have come here Thursday or Friday and maybe taken Cardiff in, or for those with great constitution in every way, they'll be here for the week. But also all the people back home, all the people that may be taking a half day from work with a turf accountant and maybe a bar nearby with the lads or the ladies and having their crack and having their fun. And that's what the great belonging nature of Cheltenham, that everybody's got an opinion. Right now, everybody is right. And then people will share stories over the week. And hopefully we'll have some great storylines, like Rachel Blackmore. Hopefully we'll have a first festival winner. She's 84 winners in the Irish Jockeys title race this season. So William Mullins, I will not. I know he's come into the festival in a little bit of a quiet spell over the winter. But William Mullins is somebody you cannot discount. And he's got a lot of good chances today. So I think things could be a bit turned on their head if Willie has a good day today.
You done? You want any questions?
No, really, they stack up pretty well, John, with the tipsters across the newspapers this morning is all I'm saying. Your Vision Don earned at first. It looks a particularly good one as well. It, I don't know what you said. Was it 11-1, 12-1?
11-1, 12-1. I think you did this thing, Owen, last year where you had my selections and I think Ruby Walters, and if they matched, you did it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're doing that again. But,
well, I'm kind of going to do it. So Ruby Walters has gone against you in the 130. He's going for Classical Dream. As part of a double, in fact, which I presume is a horse that's been spoken about quite a bit. But, to be fair, you've got Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy and Ed Chamberlain, indeed, the likes of Peter O'Hare and Tommy Lyons as well, all getting on board Vision Don Air. So I'm liking the sound of that, John. I just believe in strength and numbers when it comes to Cheltenham.
Owen, Shrew Sheehan will only get involved when he just sees the pattern of tipsters across the board. Then he will pounce. Otherwise, it's holding the money in the pocket.
I'm a sheep, but I'm going to be a rich sheep.
John, good stuff. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a million.
Cheers,
John Duggan
bye.
With us every morning. It's 12 minutes past 9 this morning. If you're watching us on any of our streams, you're very welcome. If you're listening to us on offtheball.com, you're also very welcome. If you want to get in touch, you can drop us a text. Just use the hashtag OTBAM. Ron O'Gara and Alan Quinlan on the show yesterday got stuck into a debate about who should the next Irish captain be. Brian O'Driscoll weighed in last night on Off the Ball. Have a look.
Peter O'Mahony.
Okay. Conversation over, is it?
Yeah, like, Pete's... You're chewing number six. Respected. Rose gets down and dirty every single game. Doesn't really dip below 6 out of 10 performances. Always a 7 through to a 9/10, maybe a 10 against the All Blacks.
Munster captain, captain Lyons.
Munster captain, so a lot of experience. Very old head on young shoulders, and I'm not talking about now. I mean, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, he was old before his time, and what he liked and what he did and his maturity. So I think he ticks all the relevant boxes.
A lot of people, including Ronan Boyle on Facebook and Colin McCullough, those same qualities you mentioned with O'Mahony, seeing the same qualities in James Ryan, old head, young shoulders. Shane Organ said he's a future Lions captain yesterday in studio.
Yeah.
Maybe. You were, I mean, you got it early. You know, you were 22, 23 territory.
23, yeah.
Yeah. Is there merit in skipping almost a generation and saying, if we give it to Ryan now, think what a phenomenal leader we're going to have here for the guts of 10, 12 years?
No, I would be more inclined to, there's plenty of time. What, is he 22 at the moment?
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of time for, so he would, for next generation, for as okay. a 26-year-old. I was too young at 23 to get it. I didn't really, I was, it was, work it out as you go.
Right.
Yeah, that was Brian O'Driscoll. Pretty interesting that he felt he was too young to get it. We were talking about that with Ron O'Gara on yesterday's show. You can dig that out at youtube.com/offtheball. Last opportunity to enter our brilliant Glenys competition today. It is with thanks to Glenys, the official yogurt of Irish rugby. We're giving you the chance to win a trip to Cardiff to see Wales against Ireland this Saturday. This prize includes return weekend flights, two nights luxury accommodation and a pair of tickets to the final game of the 2019 Six Nations. It's with thanks to Glenisk to celebrate the launch of their official Irish Rugby Trading Cards Collector's Album, which is available now at all newsagents. To enter the draw, share the stream where you're watching us, head over to our YouTube channel, subscribe and comment so that we know that you've entered, and we'll announce the winner on Tuesday's hashtag OTBAM. Now, Darren's here.
Morning, Ger. The champion hurdle, the centrepiece on day one of the famous Cheltenham Festival, the Nicky Henderson-trained Bouvardeur, aiming to become the first horse since the great Istabrak to win the race for the third year in a row. Gordon Elliott's Apple's Jade expected to go off as favourite under 19-year-old jockey Jack Kennedy. Ruby Walsh will be on board Lorena, who's yet to be beaten in six starts so far. Well, Pep Guardiola says Manchester City still have work to do when they face Schalke in the second leg of their Champions League last 16 tie later. City are in strong position to progress after a dramatic 3-2 win in Germany. That result means Schalke need to score at least twice at the Etihad Stadium to advance to the quarterfinals of the competition. Man City without the suspended pair Nicolas Otamendi and Fernandinho. Kevin De Bruyne is out with a hamstring injury. John Stones will be assessed closer to kickoff. He's struggling with a groin problem. Aymeric Laporte was on the bench against Watford at the weekend. He could return having recovered from a hamstring injury. Manager Pep Guardiola is adopting a cautious approach.
Great results away, where in the past always we had the problems. And but in this competition, every game is completely different and something special to handle. So it's in a competition like on all another sports, who deserve more always win. In that competition, can happen, but sometimes cannot happen. So the episodic situations take a lot of influence and you have to try to control it. Well, I prefer this score that the last time we went in Anfield, for example, no? But we had to play with 3-0 down. I prefer this score, really, honestly. But, you know, it's 90 minutes and still you have job to do.
Manchester City have set up a redress scheme to compensate victims of child sexual abuse. City know of 40 potential claimants to their fund, but the number, it's feared, could be even higher. The redress scheme will see survivors receive up to a six-figure sum in damages and a formal apology from a senior club official. Former youth coach Barry Bennell, convicted of 43 charges relating to 12 former junior players between 1979 and 1990 during his time working for both City and Crewe Alexandra. Bennell was jailed for 31 years. It was his fourth conviction for abusing young boys. Ramon Calderon says dressing room leaders at Real Madrid rejected Jose Mourinho's return to the club. Zinedine Zidane instead was rehired to replace the sacked Santiago Solari just 9 months after leaving, having led the club to three successive Champions League titles. However, the former Real president had previously suggested Mourinho was the club's top target, but he now says key dressing room leaders rejected that proposal. The current Real Madrid president Florentino Perez hopes Zinedine Zidane can persuade Kylian Mbappe to join the club. The Spanish side are set for a squad overhaul at the end of the season. They're also targeting Paris Saint-Germain teammate Neymar of Mbappe. Zidane's French, so maybe he could do something with Mbappe, Perez told reporters. Asked who he would choose between Neymar and Mbappe, Perez said both. Now, it was an eventful day for Dinny Corcoran. The bowl striker won the SSE Air Tristy League Player of the Month award for February at 12:30. Then he shocked fans by appearing on Countdown on Channel 4 at 2:30. The Dubliner has scored 3 goals in 5 games. The Gypsies have had a brilliant start to the season. 3 wins, 2 draws in their first 5 games. They're up near the top of the table. Manager Keith Long says, like everyone else, he was shocked to see Dinny on Countdown.
fantastic for Dini. He's a great person, I like a lay for him. I think it's his first ever Player of the Month award, so really pleased for him. But it'd be great if we can get him onto the pitch on Friday night and get another goal for us.
You probably don't have a lot of time to sit around watching daytime TV, but did you find out he was on Countdown today?
Like everybody else, we found out through social media. Interesting, you know. So I didn't know Dini. You know, he's quite articulate, Dini, in his own way. So obviously he has a penchant for is that the right word? Penchant for daytime TV. Yeah. So you know,
he could definitely make it out of a jumble of letters, anyway. If
Listen. Yeah. Good luck to him.
He's articulate in his own way. Is the best sidestripe I've heard.
How did he do? It's a nice compliment, isn't it?
It is.
How did he do?
He got 50 points, but he didn't win. I don't watch Countdown, so that doesn't really mean a whole lot to me.
He came up against a very strong opponent, by all accounts.
Right.
Much like everybody else that was just following it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And, it seemed that he got outclassed, deservedly. Dan McDonald said, not for the first time a Bulls player gets outclassed by something that's got a bit more resources or a full-time professional. So part-timer Dini Corcoran doesn't get through to the next round. But that's amazing. Like, getting onto the show, I presume you need to have an aptitude for unscrambling things.
Yeah, he said that his man put him forward because he used to watch it on TV and was really good. So the man put him forward to actually be on the show. Then they call, they do a test over the phone to see if there's any point in putting you on Countdown. And he passed the test. They flew him out over. He obviously didn't do it live yesterday after picking up the award. It was pre-recorded a couple of days ago. So he flew over, did it, and it went well. It was actually really funny. One of the jumbles was an anagram of Bo's award.
No way.
Yeah. But that obviously wasn't what the Countdown folks were thinking.
Surely that was
planned.
Photoshop afterwards, no?
No.
You're joking me.
No, but no, it
could have made Bo's award, but it wasn't. Okay, yeah, she did not pick Bo's award.
Orders, like,
but those letters could have been Bo's award.
Okay.
Great story. Meanwhile, on the pitch, they actually won 4-1 Bo's last night in the Leinster Senior Cup through to the next round. They've knocked out the holder Shelburne at Tulka Park. Joe Schmidt will be hoping that Josh van der Fleer and Rob Kearney will be able to train today as Ireland begin their preparations for the Six Nations showdown with Wales. Van der Fleer replaced in the first half of the 26-14 win over France last weekend. Fullback Kearney strained his calf during the captain's run and he was withdrawn just before kickoff. Schmidt says Henshaw, though, who hasn't played since the England match 6 weeks ago, is still struggling with a dead leg.
Yeah, I think Rob Kearney would be a really good chance. He just had calf tightness yesterday, and again, we wanted to, right through the Six Nations, we've tried to utilise the full squad as much as possible. So it gave Jordan an opportunity to come in today, and I'd be surprised if Rob wasn't training on Tuesday or Wednesday. Robbie Henshaw would be less of a chance. Robbie is recovering, but it's a bit slower than expected.
That's a dead leg, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just, unfortunately, lingered. It's a long, long time ago since I played, but I had one, and sometimes it's just almost impossible to get rid of it fast. You've just got to let it, recover in its own time.
Now, Conor McGregor has been released on bail after earlier being arrested in Miami for allegedly smashing a fan's phone. The biggest star in MMA history is being charged with strong-armed robbery and misdemeanor criminal mischief. The alleged incident took place as the 30-year-old Dubliner left a Miami Beach hotel at 5:20 a.m. local time. A police report says he knocked the phone out of the fan's hand, stamped on it, then picked it up and left with it. It added the alleged victim's phone was valued at $1,000. Last year, McGregor was ordered by a court to have anger management training and perform 5 days of community service after being arrested after a UFC media event. Another fan altercation making headlines today comes from the NBA world. Russell Westbrook was filmed threatening a fan and his wife as the Oklahoma City Thunder defeated Utah Jazz. The NBA claimed that the pair directed a racial taunt at the player. According to the Thunder guard, they told him to get down on my knees like I'm used to. After that, Westbrook was seen on video cursing at the man and threatening his wife.
It's not the first time he's had interactions with fans this season. There was a couple of weeks ago where he was standing by the sideline about to pass a ball inbounds, and the kid goes up and slaps him. And he turns around and just has a little word with the kid, kind of talks to the parent and is like, you need to take, I don't know what he said, but you assume he's like, you need to take a little bit better care of your kid here. He's got interesting interactions with fans always, but that's obviously grim if that's true.
Yeah, I'm surprised more of that stuff doesn't happen given the proximity of fans to the court.
Well, most people aren't racist, is the thing.
Especially not around the NBA, you'd imagine, but that's terrible. Like, it's there's plenty of trash talk, as you say, because of the proximity, but that's kind of like a level below that quite considerably.
I just want to bring you what Westbrook said about it after the game. He said, there's got to be something done. There's got to be some consequences for those type of people that come to the game just to say and do whatever they want to say. I don't think it's fair to the players.
No, I think he's right. I think he's dead right. I think that players standing up for this kind of stuff is actually going to accelerate the process of hopefully making it a self-policing thing in the crowd. That, like, that's where it has to get to. The trouble is that America is a deeply racist society in many aspects of it. So, I mean, maybe it's just this is what happens in real life. It's going to happen in crowds wherever they are.
Yeah, it's worth noting that the actual guy who's alleged to have made the racial taunt and his wife, they were both interviewed afterwards. They denied making a racial taunt.
Hopefully there's some footage that will exonerate or prove them guilty. Earlier on, we were talking about the top 10 footballers. Are you done? Is that your last story?
That's
we were talking about the top 10 footballers. We've had to have a little bit of a uh-oh. There was a footballer missing from that list.
Dermot Connolly?
Not Dermot Connolly.
Stephen Cluxton?
Not Stephen Cluxton.
Keane O'Sullivan?
Jack McCaffrey?
Jack McCaffrey.
Jack McCaffrey. So, Ian O'Reilly, iO'Reilly85 gets in touch to go, what? Donald Keoghan ahead of Jack McCaffrey, you on the piss already? At Moylesy, at Off the Wall AM, hashtag GA rankings. Cheltenham week, early start. Monkey covering his eyes, face, and then winky smiley emoji from Anthony Moyles. So, haha.
That's a
Ian
quick
O'Reilly
climb down from Moylesy.
In fairness,
he didn't even bother
to defend. He hasn't said he's wrong.
Ah, yeah.
He's keeping Keoghan in, but he's dropping somebody else. Who is he? We're going to need to find out who he's dropping.
He's getting cleaved there.
Presumably Niall Morgan.
Sorry. I mean, Tommy from Meath has decided that Meath's Anthony Moyles is keeping Meath's Keoghan in the team. That's he's decided. He hasn't even phoned Moylesy yet. He hasn't even talked to him yet to see. He's on the phone to him. This is dramatic.
Typical from the Meath wing of the Meath PR.
Machine.
Machine.
Yeah.
Machine is a strong word for
it. You don't need any PR. The results speak for themselves.
We'll get Tommy on the Meath panel yet. For next year's league, or the O'Byrne Cup at least.
Tommy's just trying to get himself into the top 10 footballers in the country.
Well, it won't be that loud. Shouldn't be, anyway.
He's frantically dialing there.
Two other bits of information. People are in touch wondering, is there any chance of getting an Excel sheet of Owen's Cheltenham chart? Yes, there is. We'll stick that up on the website in a while.
Yep. If somebody outside the office isn't already doing it for me. I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself as soon as we come off air.
And then also, we were asking you, what's the Kerry Mafia saying about Clifford? Is he starting this weekend? And Owen's like, well, yeah, I have good information. That's what it says. He's starting this weekend.
But Digger, I did not say that.
Digger's been in touch to say, no Clifford this weekend. He togged out for Fossil last Sunday, but didn't play. Most Kerry lads played County League games Sunday. David Shaw was full forward.
Yeah. And,
or is that full forward next week?
There was, the Crokes are playing on Sunday. David Shaw is obviously in Croke Park.
Oh, I'll hold you there. I'll save you the second bit of embarrassment on the show this morning, Owen.
I didn't say what you
Anthony
said.
Anthony Moyles, good morning.
Morning, Joe.
Oh, you're back again. Guess who's back?
Yeah. Can't get too far away there from there, it seems. What's up?
So we did have a tweet going, Jack McCaffrey not in the top 10, ahead of Donald Keoghan. Where is Jack McCaffrey in your top 10?
Why isn't he?
Is he? Is he not? Do you want to change it?
Yeah. Look. Yeah. He could. Okay. Yeah. No. I'm not going to put him in. No.
Oh.
No.
Really?
No. I.
Fair play to you, Anthony.
Come on, Owen. He has. He. He still has a lot to prove. No. Who would I take out? I wouldn't take out Keoghan. I know you boys are angling for me. This might me is biased here, but it's not about that. I actually would not take him out.
O'Connor Moylesy, you were so unsure of O'Connor, like you were debating it for an hour in your head.
I know O'Connor.
He's never proved it for you.
Yeah, but he's turned around. He's now. It's Niall Morgan, Conor McManus, Dermot O'Connor, Kieran Kilkenny, Donald Keoghan, James McCarthy, Paul Mannion, David Clifford. Maybe Clifford comes out. Does he?
To be fair,
Probably Clifford comes out. Yeah.
If you want to take that, guys, I mean, you can, by all means, you know, why don't you ring up David Clifford as the PR wing of the Dublin Mafia, Darren, and say, sorry.
Why surely should you be ringing him up to let him know?
My people have decided that you're not worthy of a top 10 inclusion. I'm fine with that, as long as you're fine with that.
You're just not a strong enough Kerry Mafia representative.
Clifford's gone, and everybody moves up one, and we're
McCaffrey goes in. This shows the power of Darren's, his appointment as the PR wing of the Dublin Mafia. Like, he's been able to turn you guys there in less than a half an hour. It wasn't even talking of McCaffrey, and he's got him in now where? Third.
Was your whole parameter not kind of league form and stuff like that? On league form, is Jack McCaffrey one of the top 10 players in the league?
I was trying to get two kids to bed, lad, last night. I had a moment of weakness.
They don't have a clue what you're talking about. They're like, blah, blah, blah. I understand your pain. Here, we've got to go. Thanks very much for that. Thank you. That's Anthony Moyles not quite sticking Jack McCaffrey in his top 10.
To be fair, Jack McCaffrey has to be there. He absolutely has to be there.
Tommy says he's not letting him change it because he's already got four dubs in it and you can't have any more than that. It's new Mead rules he's just made up.
The top 10 is the top 10. It doesn't matter what county colours they were.
It's 9:30 this morning. You're listening to, it turns out, a slightly extended version of OTBAM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us a comment on wherever you're watching the stream. Or, of course, if you want to just listen to us as a breakfast radio show, you can do that, offtheball.com. Hit the listen live button, minimise it, and go about your life unmolested by an open window on your browser. It's like a modern technology wonder. We're going to bring you the Type 5 with Neil Tracy next. Enjoy.
You're welcome along to another edition of the Tide 5. I'm here in studio with Off the Ball's resident rugby nerd, Neil Tracy. How are you?
Not too bad, though. How are you getting on?
Good. Great news for everybody who's a fan of the Tide 5 this week, because we are back up to 5 talking points. We're going to focus
on... five of them.
Yeah, full 5 of them after the weekend's Six Nations action. We're going to talk about Ireland's line-out and the Mall quite a bit. We're going to get into Wales, as you can see on the sidebar there. Line-out trick play and the English scrum. So we may as well kick things off with the Ireland Mall. What struck you from Ireland's performance against France in this department?
Well, first of all, it's just simply that the line-out into a Mall was a big weapon for Ireland yesterday. 4 tries, 3 of them were directly the first phase off a line out into a Mall over the line. So that was the 3 tries. It was Rory Best, Johnny Sexton's and Keith Earls in the second half. The first one that we're going to look at is Rory Best's one. And this is probably just it's actually some really good play from CJ Stander more than anything. Just about, it's almost like creating a diversion that allowed that little gap for Rory Best to go over. So we're going to look at the first slide here. And as you can see there, circle there is CJ Stander. That's just as the ball is about to be thrown in by Rory Best. So Stander basically, he's just bracing himself to come around and get ready into the Mall. Now we'll just roll on to the next one. And that is, at this point here now, the line-out is, you know, he's up in the air, line-out's about to come down, CJ Stander's eyeing him up, and you can see there, French number 2, Guillaume Garrido. He's pretty much eyeing up Stander, because as it looks here, Stander's going to be the guy that's coming in, ripping that ball, and bringing it back to the back of the Mall and setting things up. So Garrido's just keeping his eyes firmly peeled on him. Now we'll just go on to the next one. What happens here is Stander goes in. It looks for all the world like he is actually picking that ball. Mm. And he's going to be setting up the Mall and, you know, just putting it back on his back for someone else to pick up and go on. And again, Garrido's looking at him. We'll just go back there again. We'll just go back there. We can see what Rory Best is going to do. He's actually going to come around and take that ball instead.
Okay.
So he's going to be the ball carrier off the back of this. Now we'll just go on. At this point, what happens is Garrido still looking at CJ Stander. It really looks like he has the ball. Rory Best just looks like he's coming in to support Stander as he prepares to kind of break off. And we'll go on to the next slide. At this point, Stander just about kind of, he just peels up alongside the side of the Mall. And at this point, Garrido just firmly thinks this guy has the ball. He's about to break and go for the try line. So he is bitten on that now. Mm. He's like that fish, you know, he's just bitten on the bait. What you can see, though, is right at the back there, Van der Fleer is passing the ball off to Rory Best, and that's the gap created in the corner for Best to go over. So it's just about that little diversion created by Stander to just make the French defence and Garrido think that I have this, I'm about to peel off and go for the line. But while he's doing all that, it's just the sleight of hand, balls have been moved to the back, and Rory Best has a clean run into the line.
It's good subterfuge from Van der Fleer there as well.
Yeah.
Would Ireland be looking at Garrido there and thinking, what does he think we're doing, and adapt accordingly? Or were they going to go exactly like that with the ball in the exact same people's hands, regardless of what France thought?
No, I'd say they probably analysed what France had been doing in their previous games, the way they set up at lineouts, because You can see it as well from Keith Earl's try as well, which we're going to show now. This was a lovely little, I suppose, a bit of a trick play as well. Ireland have experimented with putting backs into the line-out over the last couple of years. We would have seen Conor Murray actually being lifted and taking a couple of line-outs themselves in the last year or so. But what we're going to do here is you can see Keith Earls is the front man at the line-out. This is just as the ball is being thrown in. So we'll just move it on again here. But what's going to happen is the ball is taken in, the maul is set up. It's gone back to CJ Stander at the back of it. And what Earls is doing, he's just kind of whipped around. He's actually just really hiding in at the back of this maul. Mm. He's hiding in, waiting for the perfect opportunity, just trying to be as subtle as possible, lurking away. And we'll just go on to our next slide. So what happens here is CJ Stander is broken off towards the left, and Earls, who'd been tucked in behind him the whole way through, has just come out alongside him. The French defence, Picamoles and Demba Bamba, they're just fully focused on CJ Stander because they think he's carrying. They're coming out to the right, and that's created this perfect hole where you can see that red arrow where Keith Earls is just flies right through the middle, under the sticks, try time.
Demba Bamba's at fault there, though, is he?
Probably as well.
Easier said than done to actually get distracted by that.
Yeah, it is. Like, I think Ireland sold it brilliantly. I think a lot of people watching at home probably didn't even realise Earls was there until he was away.
Yeah. I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I was certainly one anyway. It was only when we all looked at it back that you saw how good the move was. And also there as well, you can see James Ryan, just staying in tight to the second row. He's probably just kind of holding that gap a little bit as well. So it's just about creating the space for someone to go through.
Yeah, the question now is, looking ahead to next Saturday, and do you look at the Welsh maul defence? There was a couple of signs from them at the weekend that might tell us how that might go on Saturday.
Yeah, and there was one in particular. I think what Ireland are going to have to be very wary of is Adam Beard, the Welsh second row. He's 6'8". So it's that idea of long limbs in the maul. And we're going to show an example here of just how well he did to break up a Scottish maul. So we're going to, this is real frame by frame stuff over a few seconds. It all looks very similar. It's a little bit blurry there, I know, but at this point in time, Adam Beard, you can see in the black scrum hat there, he's pretty much just lashed in right behind Grant Gilchrist in the red scrum hat, who's taken the line out. That other second yellow circle, that is Stuart McInally, the Scottish hooker. He's picked the ball at the back of the maul, so he's going to be the guy carrying it. So we're just going to go on to the next slide. As you can see at this stage, that's the left arm of Adam Beard, which has just come over Grant Gilchrist. And what Adam Beard is basically doing here, he's, you know, like a boa constrictor. Have you ever seen, you know, when they wrap around their prey and just completely choke them?
Yeah.
This is pretty much what he's doing. He is just working his way through the line-out, right up through the middle. Like, we see the line-out there at the maul is such a mess a lot of the time, people coming around the side. This is the perfect example of someone coming right through the middle and just picking off the gaps and working his way through. So that's the left arm coming over. Next slide. And that's the right arm reaching over now, and he's just grabbed onto the jersey of Stuart McInally, who's the ball carrier.
Right. So
at this stage he's just about got his prey now. So the next one, and that's the left arm coming back over. So now he has two arms over Stuart McInally, and he's pretty much taken Grant Gilchrist, who would have been the buffer in between the two of them, protecting McInally. He's taken him out of it completely. Our next slide. Now, you can see the ball there. He's almost onto the ball at this stage. He's worked his way past completely through. He's now in on top of Stuart McInally. And the next one. And that's it there. This is where Ali Price, the Scottish scrum half, is trying to just wrestle the ball out. He's not able to get it. It's a knock-on. It's a scrum to Wales. So it's just a really good example of working your way through the maul and just picking off player by player before you get to the ball. What Ireland will be doing to try counter that is have a long train, single file. Mm. So basically, person comes in, rips it out, ball on the hip, next man in takes that ball onto the hip, next man in that ball onto the hip. You want a really long, narrow maul to just limit extend the amount of space, actually, that the Welsh players can work their way through on the maul.
Very interesting. And what do you reckon? Are Ireland well capable of countering what Beard is going to try and do?
Oh, they certainly are. Yeah, they absolutely certainly are. They've, as we've seen, the lineup didn't go so well against Italy, but when they got their maul going, it worked quite well. We saw it at the weekend, the maul worked absolutely fantastically. So they're certainly well capable of doing it, that's for certain. But they just have to be wary that you have a guy in there who's 6'8", and it's something Devin Toner's really good at in an Irish shirt, of just using those long limbs to reach over and pull people in and just stop them getting the ball back as quick as possible.
That's interesting. Like, so in that position, who would you want to, from an Irish perspective, if the tables were turned, if we were going up against the Scotland Mall, who is the best Ireland defender in that outside of Devon Toner? Is it James Ryan because of his huge stature?
Yeah, generally you're going to have the taller men, the second rows, trying to pick off that. If you're defending anyway, you want the guy, the tallest guy who can reach over with the longest limbs to extend over and pull people in.
All right, it's very interesting. We want to talk George North as well. You want to linger on Wales for a few moments?
This is just a nice little trick play from Wales, to be honest. Their lineout hasn't been that great in the opening few games, so this is just a nice one to just win a nice clean ball. So what we're going to do here, essentially, you can see Thomas Francis there comes in. He's marking the lineout, so he's almost, normally what will happen is the first man will come in, mark the lineout, and what teams generally try to do is they'll try walk their pack in as one, just so the opposition are trying, you know, they're trying to read where they're going, where they're going, so they're not standing there. There isn't this prolonged period where everyone's standing there and being sized up about what they're going to do. But what Francis does well here, it's all about the sell. It's all about just convincing them you're going to do one thing. George North is casually strolling in while we were doing that, but Francis walks back as if he's kind of just going back towards the forwards pack just to kind of relay a call, tell them where they're going, get things set up. But as this is happening, you can see George North has walked in to be the first man in the line-out. He's beyond the 5 metre line, which is perfect. And you can see that gap there. Mm. It's a good metre and a half gap there from the 5 metre line to where Johnny Gray, to where Johnny Gray is setting up. You can see George North is looking down at it. He knows the gap is there. Scotland haven't realised it. And when we roll it on, it's just a quick throw. No lift or anything like that into George North. He doesn't get very far with it, only gets about a couple of metres. Yeah. But it's the it sets up the first phase of what turned into 23 phases. Try.
Yeah, geez, that's sort of reminiscent of the try we conceded in Murrayfields 2 years ago, isn't it? That's sort of quick.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't a wing in that.
And Scotland did that exact move, actually, that they would have done to Ireland 2 years ago. They did that exact move against South Africa in the Autumn Internationals last year and got a try out of it as well. So I do like to see, you know, we saw Earls there stepping into a line-out for Ireland. I like to see just a variation, just kind of pushing the box out a little bit and seeing what else he can be done other than the simple straight up at two, straight up at four. Get a couple of backs in there just to kind of, even if you're not using them, just create the illusion that you might even be using them.
Yeah, it messes with the head for sure, I'd imagine. The last thing we wanted to talk about is England and their move off the scrum.
Yeah, it was just a cool move. It was just, I suppose, using the players you have. Obviously, Billy Vunipola is your number eight, but they had Joe Cockinessinga, the enormous 18-stone winger, playing there on Saturday. But what they did was, for one scrum in particular, you can see the left of the red circles, that's Billy Vunipola setting up just outside Owen Farrell for a scrum. Going in instead of him at number eight is our 18-stone winger, Joe Cockinessinga, who can surely handle himself. They would have had a few scrums at this stage, seeing they had more than enough power to deal with Italy, so they would have been comfortable using this. So he goes in at number eight. We can see that there's 14 on his back. He's slotting in at number eight. Ball is at the back at Ben, in the hands of Ben Youngs. And what's going to happen is Billy Vunipola, crash ball straight up the middle. And he gets 10 yards, at least 10 yards off it.
That's fairly simple and bloody effective.
But what I did love, I'm not saying now that Eddie Jones is watching and copying the actions of Munster School Senior Cup Rugby. But we did see this exact move used by Ordscoil Rhys at the weekend, or last week against CBC. Their huge number eight, Daniel Okeke, stands out in the centre, charges over, try. They had a flanker, I think it was a winger in as the flanker. And if you haven't already seen, he scored an unbelievable try as well a few weeks ago. He's a proper talent to watch out for, Daniel Okeke. I saw him playing a couple of years ago, playing Junior Cup Rugby for Ordscoil Rhys, and even then I was going, oh my God, this kid is seriously talented.
That's some power there. What are the chances that Joe Schmidt decides to put Jacob Stockdale at the back of his corner?
I'd love to see that. I would love to see it happen. Imagine CJ Standard charging down.
Well, as we can see, not only can he do that, he can play the nice little inside passes off the line out yesterday.
All about subtlety.
Neil Tracy, good stuff. Thanks, Millie. If you've got any questions for Neil's Tide 5 at any occasion, it's Neil_Tracy on Twitter. And we'll chat to you soon on the Tide 5. We'll be back again next Tuesday.
You know, he didn't do anything really wrong, you know, other than that, you know, Pinot challenge in the air, and Pinot still knocked it on. So, that's something that... We're not defending a try.
To
say, well, he could have done a little bit better. He still managed to challenge and stop the player from getting a clean catch. So is that not a win from his perspective? I think there's the difference between Robbie Henshaw and Rob Kearney and Jordan Larmour is that comfort. And I think it's the same the country over, irrespective of coaching staff or players or fans or media like us, that we are more comfortable with the bigger men, and particularly with Rob back there and the history of his ability in the air. You know, you feel that with Robbie as well, even though he hasn't had to prove it for a number of years. I think Jordan's not there. Mm. And will he get there? I hope so. But it's definitely the part of his game, if he wants to play in the 15 jersey, that he's going to have to work on most, because as a smaller man, you will get targeted.
Yeah, Brian O'Driscoll speaking to Joe Molloy on last night's Off the Ball. Remember, you can check out all our rugby content over on YouTube. It's youtube.com/offtheball. We also had Alan Quinlan and Ronan O'Gara on yesterday's OTB AM. So if you're still looking for content in terms of reaction to the weekend Six Nations, you can head on over to our YouTube now. You can head on over to offtheball.com as well if you missed John Duggan's tips earlier on. And of course, Anthony Moyles' top 10 footballers in the country. Here's a tweet from Dave McAuliffe, who says, I like how Owen Sheehan glossed over Sean O'Shea this morning to keep him under the radar. Looking forward to his top 10 player list featuring all dubs. I'm not sure if I should promise to do that or not. I think that's kind of dangerous territory there, Dave, but thanks a million for the tweet. And that is our lot this morning on OTB AM. And just before we want to go, we want to say congratulations to Dara Griffin, who went for John O'Shea's 93rd minute equaliser for Ireland against Germany in 2014 as his favourite Ireland goal. You've won a pair of premium tickets to Ireland against Georgia, which is of course Mick McCarthy's first game back in charge of Ireland, and you're also in the draw for our overall prize on Friday, and the overall prize includes 4 premium tickets to the game, a hotel stay for all in Dublin, including dinner, and the opportunity for one child to be a flag bearer at the game. So it's a brilliant prize, and it's all with thanks to SSE Electricity, who are proud energy partners of the FAI, and to celebrate the launch of the new campaign. This is a new era. This is Generation Green. You can enter every morning this week on OTB AM, and we'll be back tomorrow morning from 7:45 AM. Tonight on Off the Ball, Joe Molloy is presenting. Niall Moyna will be on to talk about transgender athletes, and the football show will bring you everything from the Champions League and, of course, plenty as well from the first day of Cheltenham. We'll chat to you tomorrow morning. Bye-bye for now.
So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 AM.